Chapter 137. Underscore how the whole of us marched towards Tezcuco, and what happened to us on our way there. Underscore. When Cortes found himself so well provided again with muskets, powder, crossbows, and horses, and observed how impatient the whole of us, officers as well as soldiers, were to commence the siege of the great city of Mexico, he desired the caciques of Tlaxcala to furnish him with 10,000 of their troops to join us in the campaign of Tezcuco, as this was one of the largest towns of New Spain, and next in importance to Mexico. The elder Xicotencatl, now called Don Lorenzo de Vargas, assured him that not only the 10,000, but many more troops were at his service, and that the brave cacique Chichimclatl, our particular friend, would himself march out at their head. Cortes returned him the most sincere thanks, and, after having reviewed the whole of his troops, whose exact number one, I have forgotten, we commenced our march on the fourth day after Christmas of the year 1520. The first night we quartered in a township which was subject to Tezcuco, and were provided with everything we required. From this place we arrived on the Mexican territory, where, if possible, we observed still greater precaution, and always had four of the horse patrol and an equal number of foot in advance to explore the defiles, as we had been informed on our march that a very formidable mountain pass had been blocked up by large trees which the enemy had felled when notice of our approach was received in Mexico and Tezcuco. During this day's march, however, we met with no kind of obstacle, and quartered ourselves for the night about 12 miles further on, at the foot of a mountain. Here we found it very cold, but kept a sharp lookout. With break of day we continued our march further up the mountain, and speedily arrived where the mountain pass had been blocked up by felled trees, and a deep hollow had been made, but as we had great numbers of Tlaxcalans with us, we soon managed to clear away the trees, and to fill up the hole, so as to enable our cavalry to pass over, a company of crossbowmen and musketeers marching in advance. We now ascended the mountain for some time, and then descended a little, until we came to a spot whence we had a fine view of a lake of Mexico and its large towns standing in the midst of the water. As soon as we beheld this city again, we thanked the Almighty for having conducted us thus far, and we promised ourselves to act more prudently in this campaign against Mexico than we had done previously. On descending this mountain, we observed numbers of signal fires about Tezcuco and the townships subject to it, and when we had arrived at another formidable pass, we came up with a large body of Mexicans and Tezcucans. They were waiting our arrival near a bridge which had been half burnt down, the water being of considerable depth. We, however, soon put the enemy to flight, and got safely on the opposite side, though our enemies still continued to yell fearfully from out the defiles and other places where we could not get at them, but that was all they did. Although it was impossible for our cavalry to maneuver here, our friends the Tlaxcalans did not remain inactive, for they spread themselves about the country, and carried off everything they could lay their hands on. Although Cortes had ordered that no hostilities should commence unless the enemy attacked us first, the Tlaxcalans, however, maintained that if these Tezcucans had been friendly inclined towards us, they would not have marched out against us as far as the bridge to stop our further progress. The night following we took up our quarters in another township under Tezcuco. Here the whole of the inhabitants had fled, nevertheless we took every precaution, as we were almost sure we should be attacked by a vast body of Mexicans who were lying in wait for us in another mountain pass. This we had learned from 5 Mexicans whom we had taken prisoners at the bridge just mentioned, but we afterwards heard that they had not dared to run the risk of an engagement with us, and had, consequently, marched off their troops, besides which, at that time, the Mexicans and Tezcucans were not upon the best of terms with each other, and the smallpox was raging throughout the whole of this district, so that they were not able to bring many warriors into the field, while our recent victories over the Mexican garrisons of Cuauhtecula, Ixtucan, Tepica, Xalatzinco, and Castilblanco, had spread terror through the country, and it was firmly believed that the united forces of Huitzilopochtli and Tlaxcala had joined us in this campaign. The spot where we had encamped for the night may have been about 8 miles from Tezcuco, which we left at break of day, and observed every military precaution as we passed along. We had scarcely proceeded a couple of miles when our scouts came in with the glad tidings to Cortes that about 10 Indians were approaching, all unarmed, and bearing a species of golden banner. Neither had they, on passing by any dwellings or plantations, been assailed by such terrible yells as on the day before, but everything wore the aspect of peace. Cortes and the whole of us were delighted with these good omens, and we halted for some time to rest a little. 7 distinguished Tezcucans now came up, carrying a golden banner at the point of a long lance, which they lowered, in token of peace, as they approached nearer to us. When they had arrived in the presence of Cortes, who had Doña Marina and Aguilar standing at his side, They addressed him as follows: Malinche, our Lord and Master Coatzacoatzin, too, the King of Texcoco, has sent us to you to beg of you to take him into your friendship. He awaits you in his city of Texcoco, and, in token of peace, he sends you this golden banner. At the same time he requests you will command your brothers and the Tlaxcalans not to commit any depredations in his country, and wishes you to take up your quarters in his city, where he will provide you with everything you may require. These persons likewise assured us that the troops which lay in wait for us in the defiles and mountain passes were not of Texcoco, but the whole of them were Mexicans sent out against us by Cuauhtémoc. Cortés and the whole of us were overjoyed at the message which the king of Texcoco had sent us. He embraced the ambassadors and three of them most affectionately, for they were relatives of Moctezuma, and well known to most of us as having been officers of that monarch. Our general then ordered the Tlaxcalan chiefs into his presence, and strictly enjoined them not to allow their men to commit any depredations in this country, nor injure any one, as we were at peace with the inhabitants. These orders they obeyed, though they were not so very particular as to the manner in which they procured themselves provisions, as every house had a plentiful supply of maize, beans, dogs, and fowls. Cortés, however, suspected the Texcocans were not in earnest in suing for peace, and deliberated with our officers on the subject, who were all of the same opinion, and observed that if the Texcocans had been honestly inclined they would not have come in so great a hurry, and would have brought provisions with them. Cortés, nevertheless, accepted of the golden banner, which may have been worth about 80 pesos. He thanked the ambassadors, and assured them that it was not our custom to ill-use any of our emperor's subjects, on the contrary, they always experienced the kindest treatment from us. This they themselves would find to be true, if they abided faithfully by the peace they now sought of us. He had also commanded the Tlaxcalans not to injure any of the inhabitants, but as the Texcocans on our retreat from Mexico had murdered upwards of 40 Spaniards and 200 Tlaxcalans, and plundered them of all they possessed, he must demand of their king Coatzacoatzin, and of the caciques of Texcoco, restitution of the stolen property, and if they delivered up this to him he would pardon the murder of the Spaniards, whom they could not restore to us again. The ambassadors replied, that they would faithfully communicate all this to their monarch, but assured us that the tools he spoke of were, by order of Quetzalcoatzin, all sent to Mexico with everything they had possessed, and were there sacrificed to Huitzilopochtli. Cortés, not wishing to intimidate them, made no further reply, but desired one of them to remain with us and dismiss the others in peace. The next place we came to was one of the suburban villages of Texcoco, but I have forgotten its name. Here we were furnished with excellent provisions and every other necessary. On our road we destroyed some idols which we found in a large building where we stopped. The next morning we entered Texcoco itself, and it immediately struck us as singular that we should neither meet with women nor children, but only with grown-up men, who all appeared very shy of us, as if they were about to commence hostilities. Notwithstanding this we took up our quarters here, but Cortés gave strict commands that none of the officers or men should stir out of the large courtyards adjoining our quarters, and to be altogether upon their guard, as the inhabitants did not appear very peaceably inclined, and it was necessary we should first see how matters stood. Alvarado and Oli with several soldiers, among which number I was myself, were ordered to take possession of the great chew, which was very high, and to take with us 20 musketeers as a guard. From which place we were narrowly to watch the town and lake, of which we had an excellent view from this height. We had no sooner arrived at the top of the temple than we espied the inhabitants of this and the surrounding townships running off with all they possessed, some fleeing to the mountains, others again concealing themselves in those parts of the lake which were thickly grown with reeds, the lake itself being crowded with large and small canoes. Information of this was immediately forwarded to Cortés, who then determined to seize the king of Texcoco, who had sent him the golden banner, but was informed by the papas, whom he had dispatched to call their monarch, that he had fled with several distinguished personages to Mexico. In this way the first night passed away, during which time we kept a vigilant lookout, posted our sentinels in all directions, and made frequent patrols. The next morning, very early, Cortés sent for the chief authorities of the town, of whom many were opposed to the runaway monarch, as they were at issue with him on various points respecting the privileges he exercised in governing the town. When these made their appearance, he desired them to detail every circumstance to him, and inquired of them how long Coatzacoatzin had been king. They replied, that Coatzacoatzin, in order to raise himself to the throne, had murdered his elder brother, the former regent, and that this was done in secret understanding with Quetzalcoatzin, who had attacked and driven us out of Mexico after the death of Moctezuma, but that there were other persons in the town who had a nearer claim to the crown of Texcoco, particularly one young man, who was indeed the rightful heir. This young man shortly after became a convert to Christianity, and was baptized with great solemnity by Father Olmedo, and named after his godfather, Don Hernando Cortes. 3. He was the lawful son of the former prince of Tezcuco, Neza Alpincitli. 4. He was, therefore, without any further delay raised to the throne, and installed with all due solemnity, to the great satisfaction of the inhabitants, who obeyed the new king with the best of goodwill. That, however, he might be thoroughly confirmed in our holy religion, learn the art of governing, and the Spanish language, Cortes gave him for stewards the bachelor Escobar, and Antonio de Villarreal, who was married to the beautiful Isabella de Ojeda. The brave Pedro Sanchez Farsan, whose wife was the courageous and excellent Maria de Estrada, was appointed commandant of the town, and he was particularly cautioned not to allow the king to have any communication with the Mexicans. This prince subsequently rendered us the greatest services, and he was greatly esteemed and beloved by his subjects. The first thing Cortes required of him at present was a sufficient number of hands to assist us in launching the brigantines when they should be completed, and to lengthen and deepen the canals where they were to be launched. He then informed the king and chief personages of Tezcuco for what he intended these vessels, and of his determination to enclose Mexico on all sides. They not only declared their willingness to cooperate with us, but even sent messengers to the neighboring townships, inviting them to seek our friendship, subject themselves to our emperor, and declare war against Mexico. The whole of our troops were now divided into companies, to each one was assigned some particular station, which, indeed, was very necessary, as Cuauhtémoc sent out from time to time numbers of large pirogues and canoes, to see whether we were off our guard or not. About this time several tribes which were subject to Tezcuco came to sue for peace with us and beg forgiveness, if we thought they had been any way implicated in the late murders of our countrymen. Cortes received them most kindly, and took them into his friendship. The building of our brigantines was now rapidly continued, and there were every day from 7 to 8,000 Indians employed to lengthen and deepen one of the canals. As we had an equal number of Tlaxcalans in our service, who greatly desired to heap up honor for themselves in assisting us against the Mexicans, Cortes easily persuaded them to accompany him in an expedition against Iztapalapan, through which town we had passed on our first march to Mexico. Cuitlahuatzin, the king of this township, had been raised to the throne of Mexico, after the death of Moctezuma, and the inhabitants had done us considerable damage, and were continually committing their depredations on the townships of Chalco, Tlalmanalco, Amequimecan, and Chimalhuacan, because these had entered into alliance with us. We had now been 12 days in Tezcuco without having achieved anything worthy of mention, and therefore determined to open the campaign against Iztapalapan. Chapter 138. How we marched against Iztapalapan, Cortes taking along with him Alvarado and Oli, while Sandoval was left behind to protect Tezcuco. The expedition against Iztapalapan was principally undertaken to please the Tlaxcalans, so great was their desire to try their strength again with the Mexicans on the field of battle. Their patience was almost exhausted, and they longed to revenge the death of their countrymen who were slain in our disastrous flight from Mexico. To this was likewise added, that the Tezcucans could scarcely supply the necessary provisions for so great a body of men, and it was not our interest to be too burdensome to them. Cortes commanded this expedition in person, accompanied by Alvarado, Oli, 13 horse, 20 crossbowmen, 6 musketeers, and 200 Spanish foot. These troops were joined by the whole of our Tlaxcalan friends, and 20 of the Tezcucan chiefs, all relations of the Prince Don Hernando, and enemies to Cuauhtémoc. After the necessary arrangements had been made, we commenced our march towards Iztapalapan, which lies above 16 miles from Tezcuco, and, as I have before stated, half the town stands in the lake itself. We marched forward with every military precaution, as the Mexicans had posted their scouts in all quarters to watch our movements, so that they might be able to throw a body of troops into any place we might threaten to attack. On this occasion again they had received due information of our design, and they had strengthened the garrison of Iztapalapan with above 8,000 warriors, so that we found a considerable army ready to receive us in front of that town. The enemy bravely stood their ground for a considerable length of time, but at last gave way, so vigorously did we set upon them with our horse, crossbows, and muskets, while our friends of Tlaxcala rushed upon them like so many furious dogs. The Mexicans now retreated into the town itself, where we pursued them, but this it appears was by a preconcerted plan, and had almost proved fatal to us. The enemy retreated before us, threw themselves into their canoes, and concealed themselves, partly in the houses which stood in the water, and partly among the reeds which grew in the lake. By this time it was quite dark, and as the enemy remained perfectly quiet, We contented ourselves with the victory we had gained, and neglected to observe our usual military precautions. While we thus thought ourselves secure, and least of all imagined we were threatened by any danger, so vast a flood of water rushed all of an instant into the town, that we must undoubtedly have all been drowned, if the distinguished Tezcucans who were with us had not given us timely notice to quit the houses. The enemy had cut through two dams, and thereby at once inundated the town, so that many of our Tlaxcalan friends, who were not accustomed to deep waters, and consequently unable to swim, were drowned. We others likewise got a thorough wetting, lost our powder, and were obliged to retreat from the town in all haste, with great risk of our lives. And thus, with our clothes completely drenched, with empty stomachs, and shivering with cold, we passed a most terrible night, the enemy continually assailing our ears with derisive shouts and horrible yells from their canoes and houses. But something still worse awaited us, for the inhabitants of Mexico, who had been apprised of our perilous situation, now came advancing towards us in vast numbers, both by land and water, and fell upon us the next morning with such dreadful fury, that it was only by exerting ourselves to the utmost we were able to make a stand against them. In this engagement we lost two Spaniards and one horse, and great numbers of our men were wounded. By degrees, however, the enemy became less furious in their attacks, and we were thus enabled to retreat to Tezcuco, not a little annoyed at the defeat we had sustained. If we did not reap much honor for ourselves in this last battle, it must be remembered we had lost all our powder. We had, however, taught our enemies to respect us a little, for they remained perfectly quiet after our retreat to Tezcuco, and occupied their time in dressing their wounds, burying the dead, and repairing the houses which had been damaged. I must now return to Tezcuco, where in the meantime ambassadors had arrived from other townships to sue for peace. Chapter 139 _ How ambassadors arrive in Tezcuco from three neighboring townships, to sue for peace, and to beg forgiveness for the murder of several Spaniards who had fallen into their hands, and how Sandoval marched to Chalco and Tlalmanalco, to assist the inhabitants there against the Mexicans. _ The second day after our return to Tezcuco, three of the neighboring townships sent to Cortes, to sue for peace, and beg forgiveness, for having put some Spaniards to death. They strove to exonerate themselves from all guilt, by stating that they had been compelled to march against us by command of Cuitlahuatzin, who had ascended the Mexican throne after Moctezuma's death. They had merely done, they said, what they could not avoid, and had sent the Spaniards they had captured, with their horses, and everything else belonging to them, to Mexico. These townships, which thus came to sue for peace, were Tiptezcuco and Otempan, the name of the third I have forgotten. This was the same Otempan where the memorable battle took place which we fought against the flower of the Mexican army. The inhabitants of these townships were terrified when they heard of our march against Iztapalapan, and concluded they might now also expect a visit from us, and though they would have been pleased to hear that we had perished in the water, or had been worsted in the last battle, yet they considered it more advisable, by seeking peace of us, to avert the castigation they feared. Cortes, seeing he could not do better under the present circumstances, granted them a pardon for the past, but made them give a solemn promise to remain faithful to our emperor in future, to obey us in everything, and never again to enter into an alliance with Mexico, to all of which they faithfully adhered. After this, ambassadors arrived from another township, which lay in the midst of the lake, and was called Mizquic, though we called it Little Venice. The inhabitants of this place had never been upon intimate terms of friendship with the Mexicans, and now utterly detested them. An alliance with these people, from their situation in the midst of the lake, was of the utmost importance to us, and we also flattered ourselves we should, through them, gain the friendship of the other townships which lay on the lake. These ambassadors accordingly were most courteously received by our general, and he dismissed them with the most flattering assurances of our friendship and protection. During this interview Cortes received information that a large body of Mexican troops were marching against the four townships which had been the first to solicit our friendship. The inhabitants there durst not venture of themselves to bid any defiance to the enemy, but intended to fly to the mountains, or seek refuge with us in Tezcuco. They begged so hard for assistance, that Cortes at length complied with their request, and marched thither with 20 horse, 200 foot, 13 crossbowmen, and 10 musketeers, accompanied by Alvarado and Oli. These towns lay about 9 miles from Tezcuco, and were threatened with total destruction by the Mexicans for having concluded peace with us. In particular they were afraid of losing the crops of maize in front of the lake, which were now ready for harvesting, and from which the inhabitants of Tezcuco and the four townships had thought to supply us. The Mexicans declared they were coming to cut this maize, as it was their property, and those townships had always tilled and cultivated those lands for the Pampas of Mexico, and indeed many lives had already been lost in disputes respecting these fields. Cortés, being now well acquainted with the true state of the case, sent word to the inhabitants of those places that they had nothing to fear, but to remain quietly at home, and sent him word when they were desirous of harvesting their maize crops. He would then dispatch an officer, with several horse, to protect the reapers. With this they were perfectly satisfied, and we returned to Texcoco. When we found that our stock of maize was nearly all gone, we sent notice of it to those townships, and they immediately commenced reaping their crops, and we marched thither to protect them, with 10 horse, 100 foot, and a few musketeers and crossbowmen, besides the Tlaxcalan troops, and we took up our position on the maize plantations. I myself was twice present on these expeditions. On one occasion we had a very sharp skirmish with the Mexicans, a large body of whom had arrived in upwards of 1,000 canoes, and secreting themselves among the maize plantations, had commenced carrying off our allies. We instantly fell upon them, and though they fought courageously, yet we compelled them to take to their canoes again. In this skirmish we had 1 man killed and 12 wounded. Of the Tlaxcalans from 15 to 20 were killed, and 5 were carried off alive. The day following this skirmish we learned that the townships Chalco and Tlalmanalco, with their dependent villages, were desirous of making peace with us, but were prevented from doing so by the Mexican garrison stationed there. They complained bitterly of the treatment which they suffered from them, their wives were dragged away, and if handsome were often violated in the presence of their parents and husbands. About this time our carpenters in Tlaxcala had proceeded so far with the building of the brigantines, that the timber was ready to be put together. We were therefore very awkwardly situated, from being so closely bound to Texcoco, where we had no time to make any arrangements for transporting the brigantines hither, for now the inhabitants of this township, then those of Mizquic, or Little Venice, then again others which stood in alliance with us, came to beg assistance against the Mexicans. Besides this, many of our Tlaxcalan friends longed to return home with their booty, consisting in gold, salt, and other matters, but durst not venture, on account of the insecurity of the road, as the Mexican troops were spread in all directions. Under these circumstances, Cortés deemed that the inhabitants of Tlalmanalco and Chalco, before all others, required our more immediate assistance, that they might be enabled to form an alliance with us. The other townships might defend themselves as well as they could for the present, as it would not do to leave Texcoco without any troops. Indeed the utmost vigilance was necessary in that town. Lugo and Sandoval therefore received instructions to march out, with 15 horse, 200 foot, a few crossbowmen and musketeers, besides our friends of Tlaxcala. They were to dislodge the Mexican troops from Chalco and Tlalmanalco, and clear the road leading to Tlaxcala and Veracruz, along which the enemy had stationed small detachments. Information of all this was previously conveyed to the inhabitants of Chalco by some trustworthy men of Texcoco, that they might fall upon the Mexicans at the same moment with our troops. Nothing could have been more agreeable to the wishes of the inhabitants of Chalco, and they accordingly held themselves in readiness to rise up against the enemy at the proper time. Sandoval composed his rear guard of 5 horse, an equal number of crossbowmen, and the greater part of the Tlaxcalans, who had all their booty with them. As the Mexicans had everywhere sent out scouts and spies to watch our movements, our present march to Chalco was no secret to them. They had therefore collected a strong body of their troops, and fell upon our rear guard, which was chiefly composed of Tlaxcalans. It may easily be supposed that our 5 horse and few crossbowmen could not stand long against these overpowering numbers. 2 were very soon killed, and the rest wounded. Sandoval had indeed hastened to their assistance with the first alarm, had succeeded in driving back the Mexicans, and killing 7 of their men, yet they managed to gain their canoes, and retreat to a place of safety, which was the more easy for them to do, as the whole of the population of this district was subject to the Mexicans. Sandoval was uncommonly vexed when he found the 5 horses and their riders covered with wounds, 2 crossbowmen killed, and the rest all wounded. He severely reproached them for not having defended themselves better, and for the little protection they had proved to our Tlaxcalan friends. He could easily see, he added, that they had but recently arrived from Spain, and knew very little about fighting. His first care now was to provide for the safety of the Tlaxcalans and their baggage, and to dispatch the letters Cortés had given him to Veracruz. In these letters our general had given the commandant of that town an account of all our conquests, and of his determination to besiege Mexico, and blockade it on all sides. The letter closed by desiring him to observe the utmost vigilance, and with orders to send all those of his men who were sufficiently strong for service to Tlaxcala, where they were to remain until the road should be cleared of the enemy. After Sandoval had dispatched his messengers with these letters, and conducted our Tlaxcalan and friends to where they were out of the enemy's reach, he marched back to Chalco, which was not very far distant. On this march he was particularly on his guard, since he was well aware that Mexican troops were lurking about in all directions, and lay concealed in every house. He had indeed not advanced far along a level tract of country, covered with maguey and maize plantations, before he was vigorously attacked. The enemy, on this occasion, carried, besides their usual weapons, long pikes, which were especially intended against the charge of our horse upon their line. Sandoval, however, twice broke through their dense ranks, and, with the Spanish troops and small body of allies we had still left, he drove the enemy completely out of the field. 5 Spaniards, 6 horses, and many of our allies, were wounded. This time the enemy received a severe retribution for the fresh attack they made upon our troops, and, among the 8 prisoners which were made, 3 were Mexicans of distinction. When the inhabitants of Chalco, which lay at a small distance from the field of battle, found Sandoval was approaching their town, they came out to welcome him, and express their great joy at the victory he had gained. The next day Sandoval informed the inhabitants that he was obliged to leave again for Tezcuco. They told him they were desirous of accompanying him there, to pay their respects to Malinche, and to present to him the 2 sons of their late cacique, who had died a few days previously of the smallpox. On his deathbed, they said, he expressed a wish to the chiefs of the country that his sons might be introduced to Cortes to be installed by him as caciques of Chalco. The dying man had likewise recommended them to subject themselves to the great monarch of the Tules, as it had been prophesied by their forefathers that, at some period or other, there would arrive from the rising of the sun a people with beards, for whom the dominion of these countries was predestined, and there was not the least doubt that that prophecy was fulfilled in our persons. Sandoval returned to Tezcuco, taking along with him the 2 princes, several distinguished personages of Chalco and the 8 Mexican prisoners. Cortes was highly delighted on seeing him again, and after Sandoval had related all that had taken place, he retired to his own quarters to receive the caciques of Chalco. He paid them every respect, and, according to their request, acknowledged them as vassals of our emperor, and then installed the 2 sons of the late cacique into their government. After the caciques had fulfilled their commission, they handed over their presents, which may have been worth about 200 pesos. With the assistance of Doña Marina and Aguilar, Cortes had perfectly comprehended what these caciques had said. He showed them every possible kindness, and gave the government of Chalco to the elder prince, with several towns which were subject to it, and to the younger the township of Tlalmanalco, Chimalhuacan, Ayotzinco, and of other small towns, so that the elder came in for a little more than half of his father's dominions. After Cortes had instilled many useful things into the hearts of these men and their young caciques, he dismissed them, and they offered, in return, to render us every service that lay in their power, assuring him, at the same time, that they had been peaceably inclined from the beginning, and that they had been prevented sooner taking the oath of allegiance to our emperor from fear of the Mexican garrison. They likewise informed Cortes that, previous to our retreat from Mexico, they had concealed from the Mexicans 2 Spaniards who had been sent by him to demand of them tribute in maize, and had conveyed them safely during nighttime to our friends of Huaxotzinco, thereby saving their lives. This we knew to be perfectly true, for we had been duly informed of it by one of those 2 Spaniards who had escaped to Tlaxcala. Cortes returned these excellent men many hearty thanks for their kind feeling, and invited them to stay a couple of days longer with us, lest they should fall into the hands of the Mexicans, as he intended to dispatch one of his officers to Tlaxcala to fetch the woodwork of which our brigantines were to be made. They should then be safely conducted to their homes. After this interview with the caciques, Cortes determined to send the 8 Mexicans whom Sandoval had taken prisoners, to Mexico, and commissioned them to make the following disclosures, in his name, to the new monarch Cuauhtémoc. He, Cortes, was very anxious to preserve the monarch of Mexico and his great city from destruction, and hoped, therefore, he would send messengers of peace to us, in which case every injury we had received at the hands of the Mexicans would be forgiven them and altogether forgotten, nor should we demand restitution of the things they had taken from us. It was an easy matter to make war, but it always terminated in the destruction of those who first began it. We were by no means ignorant of the vast preparations which were going on for the defense of Mexico. It would all, however, prove useless, and the only consequences would be the destruction of his metropolis, and of all its inhabitants. He should bear in mind the amazing power of our Lord God, who lent us his aid on all occasions, and remember also that all the surrounding townships had declared in our favor. For the rest, there was nothing that Tlaxcalan so greatly desired as a war with the Mexicans, to revenge the death of their fellow countrymen. We hoped, therefore, he would send messengers to sue for peace, which we would conclude with him on the most honorable terms. With this message, to which Doña Marina and Aguilar joined some good counsel, the eight prisoners repaired to Mexico. Guatemoxin, however, would not even deign an answer to our proposals of peace, but continued his warlike preparations for the defense of his metropolis, and sent orders to all his troops in the provinces to hold themselves in readiness to march out at a moment's notice, and that every Spaniard who was captured should be brought alive to Mexico, there to be sacrificed to his gods. In order to gain the good wishes of his people, he exempted many from paying tribute, and made a vast many promises. About this time, the Cuautitlans again arrived in our quarters, whom, as we saw above, the Mexicans had ill-used for having formed an alliance with us. The dispute, they said, respecting the maize plantations, which had been formerly cultivated for the use of the priests of Mexico, was renewed by the Mexicans, who each week returned to fall upon the reapers, many of whom they had carried off prisoners to Mexico. Cortés, therefore, determined to put an end to these depredations, and marched thither in person at the head of 100 foot, 20 horse, 12 crossbowmen and musketeers. In order to make sure of success, spies were posted at proper places, who were to bring immediate notice of the enemy's approach. Thus prepared, we espied early one Wednesday morning a strong body of Mexicans advancing towards us, and when they had come near enough, we sallied out upon them, and drove them back to their canoes. 4 of them were killed, and 3 taken prisoners. After this skirmish, Cortés returned to Texcoco, and the enemy ever after left those townships in peace. I must now relate what happened to Sandoval on his march to Tlaxcala, whither he had been dispatched to fetch the materials for building our brigandines. Chapter 140. _ How Sandoval marches to Tlaxcala in order to fetch the woodwork for building the brigantines, and what happened to him in a place which we term the Moorish town. _ Having so long impatiently awaited the completion of the brigantines, and ardently longed to commence the siege of Mexico, Cortés ordered Sandoval, with 200 foot, 20 horse, and 20 musketeers and crossbowmen, besides a strong body of Tlaxcalans, and 20 of the most distinguished persons of Texcoco, to march to Tlaxcala, in order to fetch the woodwork for constructing the brigantines. He was also to take along with him the aged persons and young children of Chalco, as they would be in greater security there. Cortés had previously brought about a friendly alliance between the Chalcans and Tlaxcalans, for as the Chalcans, up to this moment, had belonged to the Confederation of Mexico, they had always joined the Mexicans in their expeditions against Tlaxcala, so that a deadly enmity existed between these two states. By his mediation, Cortés now put an end to this ill feeling, and made friendship between them, which proved greatly to the advantage of both. Sandoval, on this occasion, was also ordered to repair to another township which lay close to the road leading to Tlaxcala, in order to chastise the inhabitants there. This township was subject to Texcoco, and was commonly termed by us the Moorish town. 5. Here, on our retreat from Mexico, about 40 of Narvaez's men and several of Cortés' old soldiers, with numbers of Tlaxcalans, had been put to death, and the latter plundered of 3 loads of gold. These people were now to be severely punished for their conduct, although the principal guilt lay with Texcoco, which, at that time, was closely allied with the Mexicans, and had had the chief hand in that affair. After Sandoval had safely conducted the Chalcans into Tlaxcala, he marched on to the Moorish town, where, however, the inhabitants had been duly apprised of our approach, and were all fled to the mountains. Sandoval, however, pursued them, and killed 3 or 4 of the inhabitants, and took 4 of the principal personages, and numbers of women and children, prisoners. These people he treated very kindly, and inquired of them how they had managed to defeat so many Spaniards in a body? They replied, that great numbers of Mexicans and Texcucans had fallen upon them while passing through a very narrow defile in the mountains, where the Spaniards could only march 1 abreast, some had been killed, and the rest were taken prisoners. These were conveyed to Texcoco, where they were divided between the Mexicans and Texcucans. They themselves had certainly joined in that attack, but they had merely followed the commands of their superiors. All this the Texcucans had done, they said, to revenge the death of Cucamatzin their king, whom Cortés had taken prisoner, but who perished on the night of our disastrous retreat from Mexico. The blood of our unfortunate countrymen was even then sticking to the walls of the temple in this township. Here were likewise found on an altar the entire skins of the faces of 2 Spaniards, with the beards still hanging to them. The skins had been dressed in the same way as the leather we use for making gloves. In the same manner they had prepared the skins of 4 horses. Great care had been taken of the hair and horseshoes, which were suspended in the chief temple as tokens of victory. Further were discovered numerous articles of Spanish dress which had been brought as an offering to the idols. On one of the walls of a house were found written in charcoal the following words: "Here the unfortunate Juan Yuste, with several of his comrades, was imprisoned by the enemy." This Juan Yuste was a cavalier who had served under Narvaez, and was one of the most distinguished personages among his troops. Sandoval and his men were sorely grieved at the sight of all this, but what could they do better than show mercy in return? The whole of the inhabitants had fled away, and those women they had captured were sobbing for their husbands and fathers. Sandoval, therefore, set the four distinguished prisoners with all the women at liberty, and dispatched them to bring back the inhabitants who had fled to the mountains. These soon made their appearance, begged forgiveness for the past, and declared themselves vassals of our emperor, with a promise henceforth to be faithful to us and in every way to oppose the Mexicans. In answer to the queries respecting the gold of which they had plundered the Tlaxcalans, they replied, that the Mexicans and chiefs of Texcoco had taken it away with them under the pretense that Moctezuma had robbed the temples of it to present it to Malinche. Sandoval now marched into Tlaxcala, and arrived safely in the metropolis of that country, where the caciques had their residence. He found everything in the best order possible. The whole of the woodwork was quite finished and ready to be removed, for which 8,000 Indians were taken into our service, who transported the whole of the wood and other materials on their shoulders. These were accompanied by an equal number of warriors, besides an additional 2,000 porters to convey our provisions. 6. Chichimclayco, who, the reader will remember, was equally brave as he was high in rank, took the chief command over the Tlaxcalans in person. Under him commanded two distinguished personages, named Tuxtepal VII, and Tutical, besides other caciques. Martin Lopez, however, with the assistance of other Spaniards, whose names I have forgotten, more immediately superintended the transport itself. Sandoval had feared he should be obliged to wait a few days in Tlaxcala until the building materials could be removed, but was highly delighted to find all went on so expeditiously. His march towards Texcoco was attended with the same ease, so that after the space of 2 days all had arrived on the Mexican territory. Here matters began to wear a different aspect, and his troops were assailed by the enemy with hideous yells from out the fields and mountain recesses where they were out of the reach of the cavalry and musketeers. Martin Lopez, therefore, deemed it necessary that greater military precaution should be adopted on their march, particularly as the Tlaxcalans expressed their fears of being suddenly attacked by large bodies of Mexicans. Sandoval, therefore, distributed the cavalry, crossbowmen and musketeers, in such a manner that a portion were always in advance of the transport, and the remainder he placed along the flanks. Chichimclayco, who was commander-in-chief of the Tlaxcalans, was ordered to bring up the rear, where Sandoval likewise took his station. This chief was excessively hurt at this arrangement of the troops, and considered from the post which had been assigned him, that Sandoval put little trust in his bravery, but as the latter himself followed in the rear, and he was informed that the Mexicans generally attacked the rear first where the baggage was, he became satisfied, embraced Sandoval, and thanked him for the honor he had thus conferred upon him. After another 2 days' march the transport arrived in front of Texcoco, and Sandoval made his entry with great magnificence. The Tlaxcalans had expressly put on their finest mantles, had decorated their heads with the most beautiful feathers, and marched into the town in the best military order, while the drums and pipes were playing. Several hours elapsed before the whole had entered the town, and yet none of our Tlaxcalan friends moved out of the ranks, while they continually kept crying out, "Underscore long live the emperor, our master! Spain forever! Tlaxcala forever!" Exclamation mark underscore Cortes and his officers came out to meet them, and gave Chichimclayco and all of them the most hearty welcome. The woodwork was carried to the neighborhood of the canals and harbors, where the brigantines were to be completed. Martin Lopez, who had the chief conduct of these operations, now again set diligently to work. His principal assistants were Andreas Nunez, the elder Ramirez, a certain Diego Hernandez, with several other carpenters, and two smiths. The work went on so expeditiously that the brigantines were finished in a very short time, and had now merely to be caulked, provided with masts, sails, and then to be rigged. We were obliged, however, to keep a sharp lookout, lest the Mexicans should destroy the brigantines, which lay on the staples so very near to the lake. Indeed they had three several times attempted to set fire to them, on which occasions we took 15 of their numbers prisoners, who gave us a very minute account of all that was passing in the city of Mexico, and of Cuauhtemoc's designs. He was determined, they said, not to make peace with us under any consideration whatsoever. The Mexicans had resolved either to perish in battle or to destroy us all. One dispatch after the other was sent to the townships subject to Mexico, commanding the inhabitants to make vigorous preparations for war, and tribute was no longer to be demanded. Night and day were the Mexicans toiling to deepen and widen the canals which intersected the causeways, which were then strengthened by fortifications and palisades. To defend themselves against our horses they had constructed long pikes, to the end of which they had fastened our own swords they had taken on the night of our retreat from Mexico. They had furnished themselves with quantities of round stones for their slings, and large broadswords, with abundance of other weapons. We were no less assiduous in our warlike preparations, and the canals which had been dug for the launch of our brigantines were now of sufficient width and depth to swim vessels of considerable burden, 8, which, however, is not surprising, as 8,000 Indians were daily occupied at this work. Chapter 141 _ How Cortés marches against the town of Xaltocan, which lay in the midst of the lake, about 24 miles from Mexico, and from thence proceeds to other townships. _ The materials for building the brigantines were transported to Texcoco by about 15,000 Tlaxcalans, who in a few days grew weary of doing nothing, added to which, our provisions were beginning to fail, and as the Tlaxcalan general was excessively ambitious, and very courageous, he told Cortés he was desirous of rendering our emperor some signal service, and by measuring his strength with the Mexicans, give us some proof of his loyalty, and convince us of his courage, and at the same time to revenge the death of so many of his countrymen. Our general had merely to inform him at what point he should attack the enemy. Cortés returned him many thanks for his kind offers, and informed him that he intended to march out himself on the following day with a body of troops. His attack would be directed against the town of Xaltocan, which lay 20 miles from Texcoco, in the midst of the lake, and was connected with the mainland by a causeway. He had already thrice admonished the inhabitants of that town to sue for peace, and but very recently made them offers of peace through their neighbors of Texcoco and Otumpan. However, they not only refused to send us messengers of peace, but treated our ambassadors with contempt, and even laid violent hands on them, and then sent them back with this answer to Cortés, "Only come, you will not find us unprepared, come whenever you like, you will always meet with the same reception, and death will be your portion." This was the answer they were desired to give, by command of their gods. Cortés considered this expedition against the Xaltocans of no small importance, and was therefore determined to command in person. The troops he took with him consisted of 250 Spanish foot, 30 horse, with a good number of musketeers and crossbowmen, accompanied by the whole of our Tlaxcalan friends, and a company of the best warriors of Texcoco. Of our own officers Cortés selected Alvarado and Oli, Sandoval remaining behind for the protection of Texcoco, and of our brigantines. We were indeed obliged to be particularly on our guard, for Mexico lay close at hand, nor could we altogether place confidence in the Texcocans, as the Mexicans had so many friends and relations among them. Before his departure Cortés left especial orders with Sandoval and López to expedite the building of the brigantines, and only allowed them 15 days more to finish and launch them. He then, after having attended mass, set out on his march. In the neighborhood of Xaltocan he came up with a large body of Mexicans, who had taken up a strong position, from which they imagined to make a successful attack upon the Spaniards and their horses. Cortés here placed himself at the head of the cavalry, and, after our musketeers and crossbowmen had fired in among the enemy, he charged their line full gallop, and killed several of them. The Mexicans then retreated to the mountains, where they were pursued by the Tlaxcalans, who slew above 30 more of their numbers. The first night Cortés encamped in a small hamlet, ordered frequent patrols, posted sentinels in all quarters, and observed every military precaution, as there were many considerable townships in this district. Here we learnt that Cuauhtémoctezuma had dispatched large bodies of troops to the assistance of Xaltocan, which were stationed in canoes on the lake. Very early next morning we were attacked by the joint forces of the Mexicans and Xaltocans. They kept pouring forth showers of arrows and stones upon us from the small islands which rose among the marshes, by which 10 Spaniards and numbers of Tlaxcalans were wounded. Here our cavalry was completely useless, as they could not pass through the water, which lay between them and the enemy, for they had previously cut through the causeway which led to Xaltocan, and thereby inundated the country. Our musketeers and crossbowmen certainly kept up a brisk fire upon the Mexicans, but here again they had found means to shield their bodies, by raising up boards alongside of their canoes. Thus all our endeavors proved fruitless, while the enemy kept continually mocking and jeering at us, in derision calling our men old women, and Malinche himself a man of no courage, but whose whole art lay in deceit and flattery. Cortés must certainly have returned without accomplishing anything, if two Indians of Tepetzcuco, which was at great enmity with Xaltocan, had not pointed out to one of his men a spot which had been flooded 3 days previously, but was shallow enough for them to wade through into the town. On receiving this information, Cortes ordered the crossbowmen, musketeers, with our other troops, and several of the Tlaxcalans, to step boldly into the water, which reached up to their middles, and push forward, while he himself took up his position on the mainland, with the cavalry to cover their rear, should the Mexicans feel inclined to attack them from behind. The enemy now fell furiously on those advancing through the water, and wounded several of them, but our men were not to be daunted by this, and kept moving forward steadily until they had reached the dry part of the causeway. The road to the town was now open to them, and they made terrible havoc among the enemy's ranks, and richly repaid them for the abusive language they had thrown out. The Mexicans, with the inhabitants, now took refuge in their canoes, and fled to Mexico. Our men made a considerable booty, in cotton, gold, and other matters, then set fire to some houses, and returned to the mainland, where Cortes was stationed, for they feared to take up their night's quarters in the town, as it was entirely surrounded by water. In this engagement our troops captured several fine young females, who had not been able to escape from the town. The Tlaxcalans likewise made a rich booty, and loaded themselves with cotton stuffs, salt, gold, and other matters. The night following Cortes encamped in a hamlet about 4 miles from Xaltocan, where our men dressed their wounds, but one Spaniard, who had been shot in the throat by an arrow, died soon after. Sentinels were posted as before, and frequent patrols made during the night, for the country was very thickly populated. The next day Cortes marched to another extensive township, called Colvatitlan, but was everywhere met with yells and jeers from the Mexicans and the inhabitants. Our men were obliged to bear all this patiently, as our cavalry could not act here, and it was totally impossible to get at the Mexicans, who had posted themselves on the different small islands. Cortes, however, marched into Colvatitlan without opposition, and found the town quite deserted by the inhabitants. Here he took up his quarters for the night, and adopted every military precaution. The day following he marched to another large township, called Tenayucan, which, on our first march to Mexico, we had termed the town of Serpents, because we found in a large temple there two horrible-looking idols, shaped like serpents. This town was likewise deserted by its inhabitants, who had all fled to Escapuzalco, which lay 4 miles further on. This was the same Escapuzalco where the great Moctezuma had all his gold and silver articles manufactured. We therefore called it the underscore town of silversmiths underscore. About 2 miles from this place lay Tlacupa, the same where we passed the latter part of the night of sorrows, and the enemy killed several more of our men. Before our troops reached this town they fell in with a numerous body of the enemy, formed of the inhabitants of the towns they had passed through, joined by those of Tlacupa and Mexico, which lay in the immediate neighborhood. They attacked our troops with such impetuosity, and with their ranks so firmly closed, that it was with the utmost difficulty Cortes was able to break their line with the cavalry, and then even our foot had much hard fighting with sword in hand before they could compel the enemy to retreat. Cortes quartered his men for the night in Escapuzalco, and next morning continued his march. If, however, he had been attacked the previous day by large bodies of the enemy, their numbers were greatly increased on this, and they observed more method in their maneuvers, and wounded several of our men. They were, however, compelled to fall back into their fortifications, and the Spaniards forced their way into the town, where they plundered and set fire to a great number of houses. When the news of the unfortunate termination of the battle reached Mexico, additional troops were immediately ordered to Tlacupa to oppose Cortes, and received instructions first to attack the Spaniards, and then to fall back upon Mexico, in order to entice the Spaniards to pursue them along the causeway. This stratagem succeeded admirably, for Cortes was deceived by their apparent flight, and pursued the enemy as far as a bridge, thinking the victory was already his. When the Mexicans considered they had caught the Spaniards sufficiently deep in the foil, they turned suddenly round, and fell upon them with such terrific numbers, by land, from their canoes, and from the housetops, that Cortes almost gave himself up for lost. In his hurried flight over the bridge he was attacked by so vast a body, that all opposition was fruitless. One of our ensigns, determined not to relinquish his hold of the colors, was dangerously wounded in the struggle, and at last tumbled headlong with them into the water, but was fortunate enough to escape drowning, and, by dint of great bravery, succeeded to rescue himself and his flag, just when the Mexicans laid hold of him, and were about to drag him out of the water into a canoe. In this unfortunate engagement we had 5 men killed and many wounded, and it was with the greatest difficulty our men could fight their way through the dense body of the enemy, and regain the mainland. After this battle Cortes stayed 5 more days in Tlacupa, during which time he had another engagement with the Mexicans and their allies, after which he began his march back to Texcoco by the same road he had come. The Mexicans, who construed this movement into a flight, and imagined that Cortés had lost all courage, thought this was the moment to gain great honor to themselves, by giving the Spaniards a signal defeat. For this purpose they lay in wait for them in a spot where they could get easily at our horse, but met with so rough a reception from our troops, that a considerable number of them were slain. Cortés lost one man and two horses, but had so far cooled the enemy's lust for battle, that they no longer harassed him on his march, and in a few days he reached the township of Aculuman, about 8.5 miles from Texcoco, to which it was subject. When we were informed of his arrival there, Sandoval, with all of us, accompanied by nearly the whole of the caciques and troops of Texcoco, went out to meet him. The joy at seeing each other again was very great, for we had been without any tidings of Cortés or his troops for 15 days. After the first welcomes had passed, and some arrangements made with respect to our troops, we returned that same day to Texcoco, as we durst not leave that town unprotected at night. Cortés encamped for the night at Aculuman, and did not arrive at Texcoco until the day following. As the Tlaxcalans had made a considerable booty in this expedition, they requested leave of our general to return to their country, which he readily granted, and they took their route through a part of the country where the Mexicans had omitted to station any troops, so that they arrived safely in Tlaxcala with all their spoils. After the lapse of 4 days, during which time our general and his men had rested from their fatigues, the chiefs of several townships in the northern districts of the country arrived in Texcoco, with a present of gold and cotton stuffs, and desired to be admitted as vassals of our emperor. These townships were Tucapan, Maxcaltzinco, Naltzon, and many others of less note. When the chiefs of these townships were brought into Cortés' presence, they paid him the profoundest veneration, and handed over the presents to him, then informed him that they were desirous of being on terms of friendship with us, and of becoming subjects of the King of Spain. They likewise said, that these townships had assisted the Spaniards in the Battle of Almería, where the Mexican commander Cuapapaca, on whom we had taken so direful a revenge, had put several Tules to death. Cortés, who had always thought to the contrary, was highly delighted on hearing this. He showed these ambassadors every kindness, and graciously accepted of their present. No inquiries were made as to what the conduct of these townships had latterly been, but Cortés, without any hesitation, acknowledged them vassals of our emperor, and then dismissed them with flattering assurances of his friendship. About this time messengers also arrived from other townships which were in alliance with us, to beg our general's assistance against the Mexicans, who had fallen hostilely into their country with a large body of troops, and had carried off numbers of them prisoners, and scalped many others. Similar bad tidings were likewise received from Chalco and Tlalmanalco, the inhabitants of which towns stated that their destruction was inevitable if they did not receive immediate assistance, as the enemy was rapidly advancing against them in great numbers. They, however, did not merely give a verbal description of the danger they were in, but likewise brought forth a large piece of Nequan cloth, on which they had depicted the different squadrons of the enemy's troops which were marching against them. Cortés was greatly perplexed to know what he should do, and scarcely knew what answer to give, nor how he should be able to send assistance to both places at once. Many of our men were wounded, and almost worn out with fatigue, 4 had died of their wounds, and 8 others of pleurisy, and of bleeding profusely from the nose and mouth, occasioned by the weight of our arms, which we durst never lay aside, and by the forced marches and the quantity of dust which got down our throats. Our general, however, informed the ambassadors of the first mentioned townships that he would soon repair to their assistance, but desired them in the meantime to apply to their neighbors for help, and with their united forces to oppose the advancing foe. It was their timidity, he said, which inspired the Mexicans with courage, for the latter had not so many troops at their command as formerly, from the vast increase of their opponents on all sides. By these representations Cortés succeeded in allaying their fears and arousing their courage, but they requested some authority from him in writing to show to their neighbors, in which he should command them to repair to their assistance. To explain their motive for desiring this, I must remark, that though the Indians at that time could neither read nor understand our writing, yet they looked upon any written document as signifying a more particular and peremptory command. They were therefore highly delighted when Cortés gave them the required letter, and they showed it to their friends, who then instantly marched out their troops to join them, and with their united forces they now boldly advanced against the Mexicans, and fought with pretty good success in the battle which followed. We must now return to Chalco, respecting the safety of which Cortés was particularly solicitous, for it was of the greatest importance to him that this province should be kept clear of the enemy. Our line of communication with Veracruz and Tlaxcala ran through this country, and from which we also obtained a greater part of our provisions, as the soil was uncommonly productive of maize. Sandoval, therefore, was ordered to march thither very early next morning with 200 foot, 20 horse, 12 crossbowmen, and 10 musketeers, besides all the Tlascalan troops which still remained with us, though these had greatly decreased in numbers, for, as I have above mentioned, most of them had departed to their homes with the booty they had made. A company of Tezcucans was therefore added to this detachment, and placed under the immediate command of Luis Marin, an officer with whom Sandoval lived on the most intimate terms of friendship. We others remained behind for the protection of Tezcuco and our brigantines, nor did Alvarado or Roli leave our headquarters on this occasion. Before accompanying Sandoval to Chalco, I must make a few comments on some observations which fell from several cavaliers, who, on comparing my account of Cortes' expedition to Xaltocan with that of Gomara, discovered that I had omitted three things mentioned in his history. One circumstance was, that Cortes had appeared before Mexico with the 13 brigantines, and fought a terrible battle with Cuauhtémoc's whole armed force, which had been distributed in the canoes and large pirogues. The other, that Cortes, when he had advanced up to Mexico along the causeway, had held a parley with the Mexican chiefs, and threatened to reduce the town by famine, and the third, that he had not acquainted the inhabitants of Tezcuco with his intention of marching against Xaltocan, from fear they might betray his designs to the Mexicans. The answer I made those gentlemen on these three points was, that at the time of our expedition against the Xaltocans, our brigantines were not completed, and that it must appear ridiculous in itself, for the brigantines to have found their way over land thither, and that our cavalry and other troops should have taken their road through the lake. But as we have above seen, when Cortes had advanced along the causeway from Tlacupa, it was with great difficulty he made his retreat good, nor had we at that time besieged the town so closely as to be able to cut off all its supplies of provisions. On the contrary, Mexico was then still in possession of the districts whence it obtained those supplies. Everything which Gomara relates as having taken place on that occasion did not happen till some time after. It is equally untrue when this historian states that Cortes took a roundabout way in order to conceal his design upon Xaltocan from the Tezcucans on his march thither. He had no choice of roads, as there was only one, which led through the territory of Tezcuco. These are indeed shocking blunders, but I am well aware that they must not be laid entirely to the door of Gomara, but for the most part to the false information which had been furnished him, and this expressly to bestow all the renown of our deeds of arms on Cortes, and thereby throw the heroic valor of his soldiers into the shade. What I relate is the pure truth, and these same cavaliers were subsequently convinced that my statements were correct. Having thus digressed for a short time, I must return to Sandoval, who, after he had attended mass, marched out with his troops from Tezcuco and arrived in front of Chalco by break of day. Chapter 142 _ How the Captain Sandoval marches to Chalco and Tlalmanalco, and what he did there. _ Sandoval set out with his troops on the 12th of March, 1521. The first night he encamped at Chalco, and arrived the next morning early before Tlalmanalco, where the caciques and inhabitants gave him a most hearty welcome, and provided abundance of food for his troops, but the caciques informed him he had still to march further on to the large township of Huaxtepec, where a large body of Mexican troops was stationed, who would be joined by all the warriors of the province. Sandoval, on receiving this information, concluded that there was no time to be lost, and immediately marched towards Chimalhuacan, which was subject to Chalco, where he quartered his troops for the night. The inhabitants of Chalco had sent out spies in every direction, and learnt that the enemy was not far off, but lay in wait for the Spaniards in the thickets and hollows of the mountains. Sandoval, who was an officer of great determination and foresight, ordered his march as follows: the musketeers and crossbowmen went in advance, the cavalry were to follow three and three together, and when the former had discharged their pieces, the horse were to charge the enemy's line at full gallop, and to direct the point of their lances at the face, and continue the attack until the enemy was put to flight. The infantry were to keep their ranks firmly closed, and not to rush in upon the enemy until a signal for that purpose was given. This order of attack Sandoval deemed necessary, as the enemy's numbers were very great, and the nature of the ground unfavorable for his maneuvers. Besides that, it was impossible to discover whether the Mexicans had not dug pits or laid other snares to entrap the Spaniards, so that it was quite necessary his small army should keep close together in a body. After Sandoval had marched a little further on, he came up with the Mexicans, who were advancing towards him in three distinct bodies, with fearful yells and the horrible din of drums and shell trumpets, and instantly fell upon our troops like so many furious lions. As soon as Sandoval observed that the enemy intended to fall upon him in three distinct bodies, he likewise changed his order of attack, and commanded the cavalry to charge the foe without delay, and not wait for the rest of the troops. He then placed himself at their head, encouraged his men and rushed forward to the attack, Under the cry of Santiago. The powerful shock which the enemy thus sustained certainly caused some of them to recoil, but they immediately closed again and boldly advanced against our horse, being greatly assisted by the unevenness of the ground and a deep break, where it was difficult for our horse to maneuver. Sandoval, perceiving the enemy's advantage, ordered his foot to close their ranks again, placed the crossbowmen and musketeers in front, and those who were armed with swords and shields on the flanks. In this order they were again to advance to the attack as soon as they heard a shot from the other side of the break, which would be a signal to them that the cavalry had charged and driven the foe back onto the level ground. Our allies were likewise ordered to follow the example of the Spanish foot. This was accordingly done and the object accomplished. In this attack the enemy had observed better order in their mode of fighting, and our troops had many wounded. They certainly retreated, but only to make a stand in another and more favorable position. Sandoval, with the horse, followed close at their heels, but merely took 3 or 4 prisoners, and lost Gonzalo Dominguez, whose horse unfortunately stumbled and fell with its whole weight upon him, and he expired a few days after of the consequences. I particularly mention the loss of Dominguez, because he was one of the most courageous men of our troops, and one of the best cavalry officers, and considered equally brave in battle as Oli and Sandoval. Every one of us deeply lamented the death of this excellent officer. Sandoval now pursued the enemy with the whole of his troops up to the town of Huaxtepec, where his further progress was arrested by an army of above 15,000 Mexicans, who completely hemmed him in on all sides. Numbers of his men were wounded and 5 horses killed, but as the ground was level here, he succeeded by a desperate charge of his cavalry to break the enemy's line, and drove them back into the town. Here the Mexicans were again about to make a stand behind some entrenchments which they had thrown up, but the Spaniards and their allies allowed them no time to rally, and our horse was so close at their heels, that at last they shut themselves up in a strong part of the town where it was impossible to get at them. Sandoval concluded the enemy would remain quiet for the remainder of the day, he therefore allowed his men to take a little rest, ordered the wounded to be attended to, and provisions to be distributed, of which a considerable booty had been made. Just as his men were in the midst of their repast, 2 of the cavalry and other of the outposts came up in all haste, crying out, "To arms! To arms! To arms! The Mexicans are advancing in great numbers." But as it was always the custom of our men to have their weapons ready at hand, they instantly arranged themselves in order of battle, and marched to a large open space, where the conflict was renewed. Here again the Mexicans courageously maintained their position for a short time behind some entrenchments which had been thrown up, and wounded several of our men, but Sandoval attacked them so vigorously with his cavalry, the musketeers, crossbowmen, and remaining foot, that the enemy was completely beat out of the town, and offered no further resistance that day. Sandoval, being now sure that he had gained a complete victory, offered up thanks to the Almighty, and recreated himself in a garden of extraordinary beauty, belonging to this township, in which there were many spacious buildings, and altogether so many remarkable objects to be seen, as were nowhere else to be found in New Spain. The whole of the grounds were indeed laid out in a style worthy of a great monarch, and it required some considerable time to visit all parts of it, as it was above a mile long. I was not present myself in this expedition, and did not see this garden until 20 days after, when I accompanied Cortes on his excursion through the different large townships which surround the lake. I had been laid up with a severe wound in the throat, which I received from a lance, in the Battle of Iztapalapan, and had nearly cost me my life. The scar is still visible. But the reader will have already discovered, from my mode of describing, that I was not present in this expedition, as I have never used the expression "we did this, we marched thither," but always put "so and so was done, our troops marched to this place, and to that place, and so on." Nevertheless, everything took place exactly as I have related, for at headquarters the minutiae of every engagement soon become known, and one cannot add to or suppress any facts. When Sandoval on the following day found that the enemy had entirely quitted the neighborhood, he dispatched 5 of the inhabitants, whom he had taken prisoners in the late battles, 2 of whom were chiefs, to the caciques of this township, desiring them to send him messengers of peace, and assured them a free pardon for all the past. They, however, sent word that they durst not comply with this summons, from fear of the Mexicans. Offers of a similar nature, which Sandoval made to another large township, met with no better success. This latter place was called Acapalista, 9, and lay about 8 miles from Huaxtepec. It was in vain that Sandoval desired them to consider the difference between war and peace, and to ask themselves what benefit their neighbors of Huaxtepec had derived from all the Mexican troops they had harbored. He desired them to drive away the Mexican garrison, or he would himself march against them, and treat them as enemies. Their reply to this was as follows: he might come when he liked. They had made up their minds to make a sumptuous repast off their bodies, and to offer up savory sacrifices to their gods. The caciques of Chalco, who were with Sandoval, being aware that there was a much stronger body of Mexicans lying in Acapulco than had yet appeared in the field of battle, and that they merely awaited a favorable opportunity to renew the attack upon their town, urgently requested him to march thither, and drive the enemy out of that town. Sandoval at first refused to comply with their request, considering that he himself, with many of his troops, and most of the horses, were wounded, and that he did not wish to advance farther than Cortés had ordered him. Besides which, several cavaliers of Narvaez's troops urged him to return to Texcoco, and represented to him that Acapulco was a town of great strength, where they might easily meet with a total overthrow. But the captain Luis Marin strongly advised Sandoval to the contrary, and thought he was not justified in returning before the work was half finished, as the enemy would certainly renew the attack upon Chalco, and thereby defeat the object of the expedition altogether. By these arguments Sandoval was convinced of the necessity of marching against this town, which lay only 8 miles farther on, and he set out for that place. When he had arrived in the neighborhood of the town, a large body of Mexicans came advancing towards him, and attacked him so vigorously with their lances, slings, and arrows, that 3 horses and several of his men were instantly wounded, nor was Sandoval able to get at the enemy, who immediately retreated to the rocks and the fortified heights above, making a terrific noise with their drums, shell trumpets, and hideous yells. Sandoval now dispatched a few horse in advance, to see whether the Mexicans, in case he should attack the town itself, could march to its assistance, and halted, with the rest of his troops, in the plain. As the caciques of Chalco and the other Indian allies showed no desire to come to an engagement with the enemy, Sandoval determined to put them to the proof, and cried out to them, "Well, why do you stand looking idly on there? Why don't you advance to the attack? Are we not come here to protect you?" But they replied, they durst not attack this strong place, and considered that the Tlas had come to do the hardest part of the work for them. Sandoval was soon convinced that there was not much dependence to be placed in these Indians, and he therefore stormed the fortified heights with the whole of his Spanish troops. Although numbers of his men were wounded, and he himself severely so on the head, he continued to push forward, and forced his way into the town, where considerable havoc was made among the enemy's ranks, which was increased by the Chalcans and Tlaxcalans, who now joined in the conflict with great intrepidity. Our troops, indeed, gladly left the last part of the work to them, as soon as the enemy was put to flight, for they felt compassion for the inhabitants, and satisfied themselves by capturing some few pretty females and other objects of value. The Spaniards even checked our allies in their horrid cruelties, and rescued many a man and woman from their grasp who otherwise would have been sacrificed to the idols. The Mexicans had fled to some steep rocks beyond the town, and, as numbers of them were wounded, they washed off the blood from their bodies in a small brook, so that the very water was tinctured by it, though for no longer a space of time than would take to repeat an Ave Maria. Yet Gomara relates that the water was so completely mixed with blood that our men would not quench their thirst at it. 10. But it was not necessary for them to go to this brook for that purpose, as in the town itself there were numbers of wells full of the purest water. After this engagement, Sandoval marched back to Texcoco, taking with him great numbers of prisoners, among whom were many beautiful Indian females. When Cuauhtémoc received intelligence of this defeat of his troops, he was excessively grieved, and the more so as the people of Chalco were his subjects, and had now, for the third time, taken up arms against him. He was, however, determined to be revenged, and while Sandoval was marching back to Texcoco, he assembled an army of upwards of 20,000 men, and dispatched these in 2,000 canoes to Chalco. Here they arrived so suddenly, that Sandoval had scarcely entered Texcoco, and had but just seen Cortés, when messengers arrived in canoes from Chalco to solicit his immediate return. Cortés, who was speaking with Sandoval when this message arrived, was so enraged that he would not hear his report to the end, accused him of having neglected his duty, and commanded him to return immediately to Chalco with those of his men who were not wounded. Sandoval's feelings were greatly hurt at Cortés' reproaches, but what grieved him more than all was, that he would not even listen to him. He, however, instantly returned to Chalco, which he and his men reached excessively fatigued by the weight of their arms and the great distance they had marched. The Chalcans, in the meantime, had begged assistance from their neighbors the Huitzilcans and Tlaxcalans on the first information they received that the Mexicans intended to invade their territory again, and these two powers had made such haste that they arrived that very night, with an army of above 20,000 men. This inspired the Chalcans with fresh courage. They attacked the Mexicans in the open field, fought with uncommon bravery, And of the enemy's chief officers alone they killed and captured as many as 15, without mentioning the numbers they made prisoners. This defeat was most humbling to the Mexicans, and they were much more ashamed of it than if they had suffered it from us. When Sandoval arrived in Chalco, he found the enemy was already vanquished, and, as there was no fear of the Mexicans returning, he marched back to Texcoco, taking the prisoners along with him, and now Cortes appeared highly delighted. Sandoval, however, had not forgotten the harsh treatment he had so recently suffered from him, and peremptorily refused, in his anger, to call upon him, although Cortes had sent an invitation to him, and assured him that he had now been informed of the true state of the case, and was convinced that no blame could be attached to him. They subsequently became reconciled, and Cortes strove, by every means in his power, to regain Sandoval's friendship. Chapter 143. Underscore how we marked our slaves at Texcoco with a red-hot iron, and received intelligence that a vessel had run into Veracruz. Underscore. As Sandoval had brought a great many slaves with him, and there were besides numbers we had taken on previous occasions, Cortes resolved they should be marked with a red-hot iron. It was, therefore, announced that each person was to bring his slaves to a certain house for that purpose. Our men accordingly came with their slaves, and imagined they would merely have to pay the fifth of their value to the emperor, and that then they would be entirely their own without any further deduction. If, however, Cortes and others had acted meanly towards us in Tepica, the meanness they now displayed was still greater. First, the emperor's fifths were deducted, then a second fifth was set apart for Cortes, and other portions for our officers, and, during the night preceding the last division, all the finest females had disappeared. Cortes had faithfully promised the men that all the slaves should be sold by public auction, but this was not done, for the officers of the crown acted in this matter just as they pleased. This was a good hint for us in future, so that afterwards, when we had captured any beautiful Indian females, we concealed them, and gave out that they had escaped, as soon as it came to marking day, or if any one of us stood in favor with Cortes, he got them secretly marked during the night time, and paid a fifth of their value to him. In a short time we possessed great numbers of such slaves, and if we were questioned about them, we merely said they were Naborias 11, of the neighboring tribes near Tlaxcala, who had come to sue for peace. I must also observe that 2 months had scarcely elapsed before some of our female slaves knew of every soldier in the troop whether he behaved well to his Naborias or not. Whenever, therefore, these females were put up to auction, and they found they had been bought by a man who bore a bad name in this way, they disappeared, and were nowhere to be found. If they did not recapture them it was all the same, they were still debited to the buyer in the royal accounts. Our soldiers fared no better in the division of gold, for if any of them went to demand their share, so many items were balanced against them that they really considered themselves fortunate if they had not to pay something into the bargain. About this time a vessel arrived in Veracruz, from Spain, with the following passengers: Julian de Alderete, a native of Tordesillas, who had been appointed royal treasurer; further, the elder Orduña, from the same place, who lived for some time in Puebla. After the conquest of Mexico he brought over 5 or 6 daughters from Spain, all of whom he married well. A Dominican friar, named Pedro Melgarejo de Urrea, from Seville, who brought with him a papal bull, 12, by which we obtained absolution for all the sins we may have been guilty of during these wars. By means of this bull, Urrea amassed a large fortune in the space of a few months, with which he returned to Spain, whither he was accompanied by Geronimo Lopez, as a commissary of His Holiness. This same Lopez subsequently became the royal secretary in Mexico. Among the numerous other passengers, I can still remember the following names: Antonio de Caravaggio, who commanded one of our brigantines, and is still living at Mexico, far advanced in years; Geronimo Ruiz de la Mota, of Burgos, who likewise commanded a brigantine, and, after the conquest of Mexico, married a daughter of Orduña. There was also a certain Briones, of Salamanca, who was hung 4 years ago for exciting a revolt among the troops in the province of Guatemala; and, lastly, there was Alonso Díaz de la Reguera, who lived for some time in Guatemala, and is now residing at Valladolid. This vessel had likewise a large store of arms, powder, and other matters on board, 13, wherefore her arrival was hailed by us all. If I remember rightly, we also heard on this occasion that the Bishop of Burgos stood no longer at the head of affairs, and that he had altogether fallen into His Majesty's disgrace ever since His Majesty had been convinced, by the reports of our agents, of the great and wonderful services we had rendered the crown, and which the bishop above mentioned, in his official reports, to favor Diego Velasquez, had placed in the opposite light. In the meantime our brigantines were fast approaching towards completion, And we were all awaiting the moment with impatience when we should be able to lay close siege to Mexico. We had just begun our preparations when messengers arrived from Chalco with the information that the Mexicans were again marching against that town, and they therefore begged we would come immediately to their assistance. Cortés promised them he would himself march with his troops to their relief, and not rest until he had completely driven the enemy from their territory. He therefore immediately issued orders that 300 foot, 30 horse, the greater part of our musketeers and crossbowmen, with the troops of Texcoco and Tlaxcala, should hold themselves in readiness to march out. Of our principal officers, Alvarado, Tapia, and Oli accompanied him on this occasion. The royal treasurer Julian de Alderete, and Father Pedro Melgarejo, both of whom had just arrived from Spain, also joined him. I myself accompanied Cortés in this expedition, at his own particular desire. Chapter 144. Underscore how Cortés made a hostile excursion to all the cities and larger townships which lay round about the lake, and what happened on that occasion. Underscore. Cortés now marched out with a considerable body of troops to fulfill the promise he had made to the inhabitants of Chalco, in order at once to put an end to the attacks which the Mexicans almost weekly made upon this town. Sandoval was left behind with a strong detachment of foot and horse for the protection of Texcoco and our brigandines. We set out on our march very early on the morning of the 5th of April, 1521, after we had attended Mass, and took up our quarters the first night in Tlalmanalco, where we were kindly entertained by the inhabitants. The next day we reached Chalco, which lies in the immediate vicinity of the former place, and Cortés instantly sent for all the caciques of the province, whom he then addressed at some length by means of our interpreters, informing them that his present expedition was directed against the townships which lay on the borders of the lake, in order to force them into obedience, and also to explore the territory, and form his plans for blockading the city of Mexico. Our 13 brigantines, he told them, would shortly be launched, and he requested them to assemble all their warriors by the next day, that they might join our troops in this expedition. Upon which the caciques one and all declared their willingness to comply with his desires. The following morning we continued our march, and arrived as far as the township of Chimalhuacan, which was subject to Chalco. Here we were joined by upwards of 20,000 of our allies, who had assembled from Chalco, Texcoco, Huexotzinco, Tlaxcala, and other townships. This was a larger body of Indians than had ever, up to this time, joined our troops in New Spain. All these warriors had been induced to join us in the hopes of making a rich booty, but the expectation of plentiful repasts off human flesh, which never failed after an engagement, was no less an incitement, and I cannot better compare these many thousands of Indians than to the large flocks of vultures, ravens, and other birds of prey which, in the Italian wars, follow the armies, to satiate themselves on the dead bodies which have fallen in battle. This ferocious appetite of our Indian allies was but too soon to be glutted, for we received information that large bodies of Mexican troops, with their allies from the surrounding neighborhood, stood ready prepared to attack us in an adjoining valley. At this intelligence, Cortés issued orders that we should equip ourselves for battle early the following morning. We accordingly left Chimalhuacan next day very early, after we had attended Mass. Our march lay through some steep rocks, and we soon arrived between two small mountains whose tops had been fortified. Hither a vast number of Indians, with their wives, had fled, who yelled excessively, and threw out all manner of abusive language towards us. We, however, took no notice of them, but marched on quietly to an extensive township called Yautepec, which was quite deserted by its inhabitants. We made no stay in this place, but marched on until we arrived in a plain where there were several small wells, but little water. On one side of the plain was a high rocky mountain, with a fortification which was most difficult of approach. When we had arrived in the vicinity of this rock, we found that it was crowded with Indians, who jeered at us and greeted us with a shower of arrows, lances, and stones, by which three of our men were wounded. Here Cortés ordered us to halt, and said, "It appears that the Mexicans have everywhere taken up some stronghold, and mock at us, because they imagine we cannot get at them." He then dispatched a few of the horse and crossbow men to reconnoiter a part of the rock, in order to discover some more favorable point to attack the enemy. They, however, returned with the answer that the rock was only accessible at the spot where we had halted, and that, on all other sides, it rose up perpendicularly. Cortés then commanded us to ascend and storm the enemy's fortresses. The first ensign Cristóbal del Corral and the other ensigns were to lead the way, and all the remaining foot to follow them. Cortés, with the cavalry, stationed himself in the plain beneath, to cover our rear, and protect the baggage against other bodies of Mexicans. As soon as we commenced this laborious ascent, The Indians began rolling down large stones and huge lumps of rock upon us, and it was terrible to behold how these heavy masses rebounded as they thundered down the rugged steeps. It was a miracle that we were not all crushed to pieces, and certainly Cortes had, in this instance, not acted as a prudent general when he ordered this perilous attack. At my very feet a soldier named Martinez, a native of Valencia, and who had been butler to a gentleman of distinction in Castile, was completely smashed by a piece of rock, and died without a single groan or sigh. Two other soldiers, one of whom was named Gaspar Sanchez, a nephew of the treasurer of Cuba, and the other, Bravo, met with a similar death from the rolling masses of stone. We, nevertheless, continued the ascent with great intrepidity, but scarcely a few moments had elapsed before another brave soldier, named Alonso Rodriguez, with two of his companions, were crushed to death, and most of us were struck on the head by the pieces of stone which were split off the rock by the tumbling masses. At that time I was still an active young fellow, so that I kept up close with the ensign corral, and we reached some hollows in the rock, along which we continued to advance for some time, but at the imminent risk of our lives, until Corral could proceed no further, and held himself fast by one of the thick trees with prickly thorns which grew in these hollows. His head was wounded all over, his face covered with blood, and his colors torn into rags. Here he turned round to me, and said, "Alas! Señor Bernal Diaz, it is impossible to advance further this way, for even if the tumbling masses of rock do not crush us, we shall scarcely be able to hold fast by our hands under these projecting masses." As we were thus clinging to the rock by our hands, I espied Pedro Barba, who commanded the crossbowmen, with two soldiers, likewise clambering up to this projection, and I cried out to him, "Captain, don't give yourself any further trouble, there is neither place here to put your hand or foot, unless you wish to roll headlong down the mountain." To this he answered, in the fullness of his courage, or because he thought he was bound to speak as an officer in high command, "Here we have to do with deeds, not words." I was obliged to swallow this reproach, and replied, "Well, we shall see how well you will manage to get up here." The words were scarcely out of my mouth when other large pieces of the rock came rolling down from the heights above, by which Pedro Barba was wounded, and one of his men crushed to death. This seemed to deter Barba, and he would not move a step further up. The ensign corral now called out to the soldiers to apprise Cortes that it was impossible to ascend further, and that the descent was equally dangerous. This information was conveyed from one man to the other until it reached Cortes, who had even lost three men in the plain below, and several others were severely wounded, by the lumps of rock which came tumbling down. He had, however, not been able to see the perilous situation we were in, from the winding of the rock, but had fully expected to find that the greater part of us were either killed or dreadfully wounded. He now immediately signified, by loud cries and a few musket shots, that we should descend. This we accordingly did with the utmost precaution, each one striving to assist his neighbor down the steep rocks, until we all safely arrived in the plain beneath. Our heads were covered with wounds and blood, and the colors of our ensigns were torn to rags. When Cortes saw the terrible condition we were in, and was informed that we had lost 8 men, he offered up thanks to the Almighty that the rest of us had escaped so well. Among other things that came to be spoken about were the few words which passed between Pedro Barba and myself. Indeed, the latter mentioned it himself, and the ensign corral gave such a description of the terrible masses of rock which came rolling down, that everyone was astonished at our escape, and the account of the great dangers we had had to brave was noised about through the whole of our camp. In the meantime, a large body of Mexicans were lying in wait for us in a spot where we could neither see nor imagine them to be. They had been stationed there in case the other troops on the rock just mentioned should require assistance, but when they were informed that our attempts to storm this fortified rock had failed, both these bodies determined to fall upon us from various points at once. When Cortes received notice of their approach, he ordered the horse and the whole of our troops to march against them. The ground we occupied was quite level, and fertile meadows stretched along between the hills. The enemy now retreated before us, and we pursued them until they took up a strong position on another rock, without our being able to do them much harm, as they continually fled to places where we could not possibly get at them. We therefore returned to our former position, in front of the first rock we had attempted to ascend, but as not a single drop of water had passed our lips the whole day, and as our horses were equally parched with thirst, and the few wells here contained nothing but muddy water, for the best were in the enemy's possession, we broke up our encampment, and formed another, about 6 miles further on, at the foot of a mountain, as before, but here also we found but little water. Near this rocky mountain there stood several black mulberry trees and about 10 or 12 houses, and we had scarcely rested a few minutes when the wild war whoop of the Indians resounded from the mountain top, And we were immediately greeted with a shower of arrows and lances, while large masses of the rock came rolling down, as before. Here the enemy were in greater numbers than on the former occasion, and their position much stronger, as we soon discovered. All the firing of our musketeers and crossbowmen was to no purpose, for the enemy was beyond their reach, and too well protected by their entrenchments. An attempt to ascend the rock was attended with no better success. Twice had we essayed this from the houses just mentioned, and some few of us had reached a good way up, but we found it even more terrific than the former rock, so that we did not exactly gain much honor in this affair, and were forced to cede the victory to the Mexicans and their allies. We encamped for the night beneath the mulberry trees, but were almost dying with thirst. The following morning our crossbowmen and musketeers were ordered to take up their position on a very steep rock, which lay near to us, and to direct their fire at the enemy in their entrenchments on the rock opposite. Francisco Verdugo and Julian de Alderete, who were excellent crossbowmen, joined this small detachment, which was placed under the command of Pedro Barba. While these were on their way thither, the rest of our troops once more attempted the ascent of the mountain from the above-mentioned houses, but the enemy continually rolled down numbers of large and small stones, that a great number of our men were soon wounded, and even if we had not met with this opposition, our toil would have been fruitless, for the rock was so steep that we could scarcely move or hold fast by our hands. While we were thus fatiguing ourselves to no purpose, the detachment of musketeers and crossbowmen had arrived at their place of destination, but they were only able to kill and wound a very few of the enemy. The combat had lasted in this way for above half an hour, when matters took a sudden change, and peace was concluded with the enemy, through the interposition of a merciful providence. This sudden change was owing to the circumstance of a number of women, children, and poor people, who had been carried to a level space on the top of the rock for safety, having no water to quench their burning thirst. In order that we, who were beneath, might know what they desired, the women waved their cloaks, and made signs with their hands, to indicate they were willing to bake bread for us, while the Indian troops discontinued to throw their lances, arrows, and stones, upon us. When Cortes learned what they desired, he ordered all hostilities to be stayed, and gave the Indians to understand by signs that they should send down to us five of their most distinguished men, to conclude peace with us. It was not long before these made their appearance, and with profound respect begged forgiveness for the past, and assured our general that it was fear for us only which had induced them to take up this strong position on the mountain. Cortes answered them rather harshly, that they had all deserved death, for having commenced hostilities with us, but as they now came of their own accord to sue for peace, he would substitute mercy for justice, but told them they must go to the opposite rock, and call the chiefs of the other troops, that they might likewise come and sue for peace, and inform them, that if they refused we would continue to surround them until they died of thirst, as we were well aware that they could get no water, there being very little to be had in any part of this neighborhood. While these personages were on their way to the other rock, Cortes entered into conversation with Father Melgarejo, and the royal treasurer, Alderete, and described to them the battles we had fought previous to their arrival in New Spain, the great power of the Mexicans, and the large cities we had seen up to the present moment in this country, when they assured our general, that if the Bishop of Burgos had informed the emperor as faithfully of the truth as he was studious of falsehood in his account, the emperor would certainly by this time have nobly rewarded him and his troops. No monarch, they said, had ever been rendered the vast services he had received at our hands, who had thus, without his knowledge, subjected so many large cities to him. After this discourse, Cortes ordered the ensign Corral and myself, and two of our officers, Zaramillo and Pedro de Urshu, to ascend the rock, in order to inspect the enemy's fortifications there, and whether our musketeers and crossbowmen had killed or wounded many of the Indians, and altogether to see what kind of people they were. But I must desire you not even to take as much as a grain of maize from them, added Cortes, and I understood him to say, mind you look to your own advantage. We then began to ascend by a very dangerous path, and we found the enemy's position here even more formidable than the first one, for the rocks were perpendicular. There was only one entrance to the fortification itself, which was not broader than double the width of the mouth of a baker's oven. At the summit of this rock we found a spacious greensward, on which were encamped great numbers of Indian warriors, women, and children. All the loss they had sustained was 20 killed and several wounded. There was not a drop of water for all this crowd of human beings to drink. A considerable number of bundles of cotton stuffs and other matters were lying about, destined as tribute for Cuauhtémoc. When I saw all these matters, and knew they were going to be sent as tribute to Mexico, I ordered four Tlaxcalans who were with me, and four Indians who had charge of these goods, to take each a load and follow me. Just at that moment Pedro Urshu came up, and ordered that everything should be left where it was. I first remonstrated with him for this, but was forced in the end to obey his commands, because he was an officer. "Did you not yourself," said he, "hear Cortes say that we were not even to touch a grain of maize belonging to these people? I will certainly inform against you if you do not leave these things where they are." I acquiesced, of course, but I told him I was of opinion that these things were not comprehended in Cortes' commands. However, I returned without taking a single thing with me. When we had again arrived in the plain below, and given Cortes an account of what we had seen, Pedro de Urshu thought our general would be pleased to hear how he had restrained me from carrying off the packages of cotton stuffs, but Cortes said to him angrily, "Why did you not allow Bernal Diaz to take those things away? Really, I am astonished that you did not yourself stay with those people above. Is it thus that you understood me, when I told you to look to your own advantage?" Bernal Diaz, who understood my meaning, was thus forced to return the things which he had taken from those dogs, who now laugh in their sleeves at having killed and wounded so many of our men. Upon this, Urshu offered to ascend the rock again, and to fetch the packages, but Cortes said to him sharply, "There is no time for that now." In the meantime, the caciques from the other rock had arrived in our camp, and after giving many reasons why Cortes should pardon them, he granted them their request, and declared them vassals of our emperor. As water was so very scarce in the whole of this district, we marched back to the town of Huayaxtepec, where those extensive gardens were, which I have mentioned above, and I must declare, that during the whole course of my life I never beheld such a splendid spot. I therefore drew the attention of Cortes to them, and he instantly repaired thither with Alderete, the royal treasurer. They both walked about in the garden for a length of time, and acknowledged they had never seen anything so beautiful in Spain. 14. The whole of us encamped for the night in this garden, and the caciques of the township came to offer their services to Cortes, for Sandoval, on his visit here, had concluded peace with them. The following morning we marched towards Cuernavaca, and came up with a strong body of Mexicans who had been drawn out of this town to oppose us, but our cavalry charged them with great impetuosity, put them to flight, and pursued them for about 3 miles, up to another large township, called Tepoztlan. Here the Mexicans were so very careless, that our troops fell upon them before their spies could give notice of our approach, and we made a considerable booty, besides taking many fine female prisoners, but the Mexicans and the other inhabitants fled precipitately from the town. Cortes sent 3 or 4 several times to the caciques of this district, desiring them to come and sue for peace, otherwise we should burn down their town and put them all to death. However, they each time sent word that they had no wish to come, and we set fire to half the houses of the town, in order to frighten the other towns of this district into obedience. It was not till then that the caciques of Yautepec, through which we had passed this day, made their appearance, and declared themselves vassals of our emperor. The next day we marched to Cotalbaca, which we often erroneously termed Cuernavaca. 15. In this town lay a strong garrison of Mexicans, besides the troops of the place itself, and it was rendered difficult of access from a hollow 8 fathoms deep, which lay in front of the town, and through which a small stream of water flowed. There was no other way for our cavalry to get into the town than by 2 bridges, but these had been burnt down by the enemy, who were strongly entrenched on the other side of this deep hollow, and incessantly annoyed us with their arrows, lances, and slings. While they were thus attacking us, Cortes received information that a couple of miles further up there was a spot where our cavalry could pass over. Our general, therefore, immediately repaired thither with the horse, while the rest of us strove to get over in the best way we could. We succeeded above our expectations, by climbing up and along the branches of the trees which grew on each side of this hollow, but this was attended by considerable danger, and 3 of our men fell down into the water, one of whom broke his leg. My head grew quite dizzy as I thus passed across the depth, but as soon as 20 or 30 of us, with a great number of Tlaxcalans, had reached the opposite side, we fell upon the rear of the Mexicans before they were in the least aware of it, for they had considered it an impossibility for us to pass the hollow, and imagined in their astonishment, when they saw us approaching, that we were much more numerous than was really the case, particularly as Oli, Alvarado, and Tapia, with the greater part of our cavalry who had risked their lives by crossing a bridge which had been almost burnt down, appeared there at the same time. We now fell in a body upon the enemy, who instantly turned round and fled to the mountains, and other parts of this deep hollow, where we could not possibly follow them. A short time afterwards Cortes arrived with the remaining cavalry, and we now took possession of the town without any further opposition. Here we took many fine Indian females prisoners, and otherwise made a rich booty, particularly of large-sized mantles. Our general now allowed us to rest for the remainder of the day, and we all quartered ourselves comfortably in a garden belonging to the chief of the town. We had not been long here before our outposts brought intelligence that 20 Indians were approaching, who, to judge from their bearing, must either be caciques or men of distinction, and seemed to be coming with some message or to sue for peace. They proved, indeed, to be the caciques of the town, who approached Cortes with the utmost veneration, handed over to him a present in gold, and begged pardon for their recent behavior towards us. In excuse for not having come earlier to demand peace of us, they said that Cuauhtemoc had secretly commanded them to treat us as enemies, and that they had not been able to avoid this as their town formed one of the fortifications of the country, and was occupied by a Mexican garrison. They were now, continued they, convinced, that there was no fortification we could not take, and it was therefore their sincere wish to become friendly with us. Cortes was very kind to these caciques, and spoke to them of our emperor, and of his mercy to all those who willingly obeyed him, and it was in his name he now acknowledged them as his subjects. I still remember the extraordinary expression these caciques made use of on this occasion, namely, that our gods in punishment for their not having sued earlier for peace, had given their gods authority to chastise their persons and deprive them of their property. 16. Chapter 145. _ The terrible thirst we suffered on our further march, our dangerous position at Xochimilco, and the many battles we fought there with the Mexicans, until our return to Texcoco. _ From Cuernavaca we marched toward Xochimilco, a large town lying about 11 miles from Mexico, 17, and of which the greater part was built in the water. On our march we adopted our usual military precautions, and arrived at a forest of pine trees, without being able to obtain a single drop of water all the way. Our arms were very heavy, and the day, which had been exceedingly hot, was now far spent, and we were almost parched with thirst, yet we had still several miles to go, nor did we know for certain whether we should find the wells, which, it was said, lay further on. By this time the whole of our troops were almost exhausted with fatigue, and our Tlaxcalan friends lost all courage after one of their countrymen and an old Spaniard died of thirst. Cortes, observing the great distress we were in, ordered us to halt under the shade of the pine trees, and dispatched 6 of our horse in advance, along the road leading to Xochimilco, in search of some town or village where it was said we should find the wells, as our general proposed to encamp near them for the night. This small body of cavalry, among which were Oli, Valdenebro, Truxillo, and other brave men, had scarcely left, when I slipped away without being observed by Cortes and the others, taking with me 3 of my Tlaxcalan Naborias, who were active young fellows, and I followed the 3 above-mentioned cavalry officers until I was observed, and they halted to wait my coming up. They advised me to return immediately, that I might not fall into the hands of the Mexicans. I was not, however, to be deterred by this, and Oli, with whom I stood on a very friendly footing, at length gave me permission to accompany them, but to hold my hands ready for battle and my legs for flight. I would at that moment have risked my life to obtain a drink of water, so painful was my thirst. We may have advanced about a couple of miles in a straight line when we came up to a number of country houses which lay scattered among the hills, and were subject to Xochimilco. Our officers entered these dwellings without delay, in search of water, which they found, to their inexpressible joy. One of my Tlaxcalans, who had followed them, instantly returned to me with a large earthen jug full of water, with which I and my servants quenched our thirst. I now again returned to the wood where Cortes had halted with our troops, and it was high time I did, as the inhabitants were beginning to assemble, and they followed us with hootings and yells. I had ordered the jug to be replenished with water, and gave it to one of my Tlaxcalans to carry. On my return, I met Cortes, who had again put his troops in motion. I informed him that we had found water in a small village not far off, and that I had brought him a jug full. My Tlaxcalans had taken the precaution to cover up the jug carefully, that no one might take it from them, for thirst knows no law. Cortes and the other officers by whom he was surrounded were highly delighted, and drank their fill. We then continued our march, and reached the small village before sunset. There was still some water left in the houses, but not sufficient for the whole of our troops, so that several of the men, in order at least to moisten their mouths, chewed a kind of thistle, the sharp prickles of which wounded their tongues and lips. The small detachment of horse now also returned, and informed our general that they had found the wells where we were to encamp for the night. But these were still a good way off, and the whole neighborhood was beating to arms. We encamped near the wells for the night, ordered the pickets and outposts as usual, and otherwise took every precaution. I myself formed one of the night watch, and, if I still remember rightly, it blew a strong gale of wind, and some rain was falling. The next morning very early we marched toward Xochimilco, and arrived in front of the town about 8 in the morning. Here an immense body of the enemy stood ready to oppose us, part of whom were stationed in the open fields, and the rest in front of a bridge which had been destroyed, and near which large entrenchments had been thrown up. At the end of their pikes they had fastened the swords we had lost on our unfortunate retreat from Mexico, and many of the chiefs were armed with our own broadswords, which had been beautifully polished. The whole of the Mexicans appeared to be well armed, and the entire plain was filled with warriors. The conflict for the possession of the bridges lasted about half an hour, yet, with all our firing and hard fighting, we were not able to force them. Our situation became truly perilous, for large bodies now fell upon our rear, so that the only choice we had left was to cross the water at all hazards. In this we fortunately succeeded, partly swimming, and partly wading through. Several of our men, while thus crossing over, drank so much water that their stomachs swelled out to an enormous size. In crossing this water, we lost two men, and had several wounded. Nevertheless, we succeeded, by dint of our swords, to drive the enemy before us along a causeway which led to the mainland. Cortes, who was advancing with the cavalry from another quarter, fell in with a body of more than 10,000 Mexicans, who were coming to the assistance of the town. The Mexicans, on this occasion, received the charge of the cavalry with fixed lances, and wounded four of our horses. Cortes himself had got into the midst of the enemy, and rode a dark brown horse, which we commonly termed the _flatnose_. Whether this animal, which was otherwise an excellent horse, had become too fat, or was over-fatigued, I cannot say, but, to be short, it fell down with its rider, and numbers of Mexicans instantly laid hold of our general, tore him away from the saddle, and were already carrying him off. When some of the Tlaxcalans and the brave Cristóbal de Olea saw this, they immediately flew to his assistance, and, by dint of heavy blows and good thrusts, they cut their way through to our general, and assisted him into his saddle again. Cortes fortunately escaped with only a wound on the head, but Olea had received three very severe wounds. 17. Those of us who stood nearest now also hastened to the assistance of Cortes, for, as every street was crowded with the enemy, we were obliged to attack them in separate bodies and from different points, so that, for some time, we had totally lost sight of him. But we concluded, from the terrific yells of the Mexicans, that there must be a severe struggle between them and the cavalry. We therefore cut our way through the enemy, at the risk of our lives, to the spot where Cortes, surrounded by only 10 of the cavalry, was bravely repelling the desperate attacks of the enemy. The Mexicans had taken up a position behind a deep canal, which had been strengthened by a palisade. They thus had the advantage ground, but we soon put them to flight. As Olea, who had saved our general's life, was severely wounded, and had lost much blood, and the streets were still crowded by the enemy, we advised Cortes to march back to some entrenchments, under cover of which his own and Olea's wounds could be dressed. This retrograde movement was not accomplished without considerable difficulty and danger, for the Mexicans now imagined we were going to retreat altogether, and fell upon us with redoubled fury. In the midst of this second conflict, Alvarado de Pianoli, with the main body of the cavalry, made their appearance, who had been attacking the enemy at other points. The blood was trickling down Oli's face, nor had any one of them escaped without a wound. They said they had been attacked by terrific bodies of the enemy, in the open fields, and had not been able to drive them back. The reason of their having been separated from the rest of the cavalry was, because Cortes, after he had passed across the water, ordered the horse to divide into two bodies, and attack the enemy at different points. While we were busily engaged dressing the wounds of our men, all at once there arose from out of the streets and adjoining fields terrific yells. With the wild war music of the enemy, the courtyard in which we had stationed ourselves was suddenly filled with Mexicans, and, in a very few moments, many more of our men were wounded. But the enemy drew very little advantage from this bold enterprise, for we set upon them so vigorously in return, that great numbers of them soon lay stretched on the ground. Our cavalry also galloped in among them, and slew a great many more. On our side, we had only one man killed and two horses wounded. We drove the enemy completely out of the open square, and took possession of another more spacious, in which stood several large temples, where we could rest ourselves in greater safety. Several of our men mounted to the top of these temples, from whence they could see the great city of Mexico and the extensive lake which it commanded, but at the same time they espied more than 2,000 canoes, all filled with warriors, making straightway to us as fast as their paddles could bring them. These troops were commanded by Cuauhtémoc to attack us immediately, and to leave us no peace night or day. He had likewise dispatched another 10,000 men by land, to fall upon us from another quarter, and another 10,000 men stood ready to march hither to relieve the first, that not a single man of us might escape alive from Xochimilco. All this we learnt the day following from the five Mexican chiefs whom we took prisoners. but the Lord Jesus had disposed otherwise for us. As soon as intelligence was received of the approach of this vast fleet of canoes, we were doubly vigilant, and strong detachments were placed at all the places and canals where we thought the enemy would disembark. Our horses stood ready saddled, and every officer, including Cortes himself, made the rounds during the whole of the night, and kept a sharp lookout on the causeway and towards the mainland. I myself was posted with 10 men near a stone wall. We were furnished with stones, crossbows, muskets, and long lances, and were to prevent the enemy from landing in this quarter. Similar small detachments were stationed at the other canals. I and my comrades thus keeping a sharp lookout, we heard all at once the noise of several canoes, which were advancing directly towards us, but we gave the enemy so rough a reception with our slings and lances, that they durst not venture to land, and while one of our men had hastened to inform Cortes of what was going forward in this quarter, a second and still more numerous squadron of canoes arrived, and attacked us most vigorously with lances, stones, and arrows, wounding 2 of our men, but we defended ourselves with no less vigor, and, as it was an uncommon dark night, these canoes again joined the great body of the fleet, which had repaired to some other small harbor or deeper canal, where the whole of them disembarked. These troops, who, it seemed, were not very willing to fight at nighttime, joined those which Quatimoxen had sent by land, and both together formed an army of above 15,000 men. I must here mention a circumstance, which, however, I hope the reader will not construe into vanity on my part. When one of the men belonging to my small detachment brought Cortes intelligence that a number of Mexican canoes had approached the spot where we were stationed, he, with 10 of the cavalry, was just coming towards us. As they approached us with the utmost silence, I and Gonzalo Sanchez cried out to them, "Who goes there? How? Can't you open your mouths?" And then slung 3 or 4 stones at them. But Cortes, who immediately recognized us by our voices, remarked to Alderete, Father Malgarejo, and our quartermaster Cristobal de Oli, who accompanied him, "I am in no fear with regard to this quarter, for here are posted 2 men who came with me when I first arrived in this country, and to whom I would entrust a more important command than this." He then came up and spoke to us himself, and observed that our position was one of great danger, and that, in case of need, we were instantly to send for assistance. Our general had scarcely left us when we heard him driving a soldier back to his post, which he had deserted. It was one of those who came with Narvaez. There is likewise another circumstance which I must not forget to mention. In the battle of the previous day, our musketeers had spent all their powder, and the crossbowmen their arrows. Cortes, therefore, during the nighttime, ordered us to collect all the arrows we could find, and to furnish them with fresh feathers and points, of which we had always a good stock by us. With this work our crossbowmen were occupied the whole of the night, and Pedro Barba, captain of that company, never left them for a moment, Cortes himself looking in from time to time to see how they were getting on. When daylight appeared, our camp was assailed by the whole of the Mexican troops from different points at once, but as we were never unprepared for an attack, our cavalry rushed out towards the land side, and we others, with the Tlaxcalans, towards the lake, and fell so vigorously on the Mexicans that we soon killed 3 of their chiefs, and numbers of their troops died of their wounds the day following. The Tlaxcalans behaved with uncommon bravery, and took 5 Mexican chiefs whom they brought in prisoners, from whom we learned the exact number of troops which Quatimoxen had ordered against us. On our side we had only 1 killed, but a great number of wounded. This battle, however, had not yet terminated, for our cavalry, in pursuing the enemy, came up with the 10,000 warriors whom Quatimoxen had dispatched to the assistance of the others. Several of the officers who commanded these troops wore our Spanish swords, of which they were not a little vain, and they said it was by our own swords we were to be vanquished. Our few horse durst not encounter so large a body of the enemy, and therefore drew off to one side, until they should be joined by Cortes with the rest of the troops. When our general was informed of their critical position, he instantly sallied out, with the rest of our cavalry, who had remained in the courtyard on account of their wounds, and all our foot, with the Tlaxcalan troops. A most terrible and obstinate conflict now ensued, but at length, by dint of heavy blows and thrusts, we repulsed the enemy, with considerable loss. On this occasion 8 distinguished Mexicans fell into our hands, from whom we learnt that Quatimoxen had dispatched against us another considerable fleet of canoes, and other large bodies of his troops by land. These troops he had sent off with the perfect assurance that, coming suddenly upon us, they would complete the victory, after we had been fatigued by such constant fighting, and weakened by loss of men and the number of our wounded. When we heard this we were doubly on our guard, and our general determined to abandon the town on the following morning, and not wait for any further attacks. We therefore made the best use of our time to dress our wounds and repair our weapons. During this interval, it appears that some prisoners of Xochimilco pointed out to the Tlaxcalans several houses belonging to rich individuals, in which were hidden many valuable things, such as manufactured cotton interwoven with feathers, women's shifts, gold, and other matters. These houses stood in the lake, but it was possible to reach them by a causeway, and by passing over two or three bridges which lay across the deep canals. The Tlaxcalans communicated this to several of our men, who instantly repaired to these houses, which they found quite unprotected, and, as they had been told, filled with various articles of value. They stowed away as much as they possibly could, and returned with a rich booty to our headquarters. When others of our men saw these rich spoils, they likewise paid a visit to these dwellings, and were busily engaged in emptying some wooden cases, which were full of different things, when a large fleet of Mexican canoes arrived with a numerous body of troops, and suddenly fell upon the plunderers, of whom they wounded the greater part, and carried off four alive to Mexico. It was indeed a wonder that the rest escaped. Two of the four Spaniards were Juan de Lara and Alonso Hernandez, the two others belonged to the company which stood under the command of Andreas de Monjeratz, but I have forgotten their names. These unfortunate men were brought into the presence of Quatimoxen, who questioned them about the smallness of our army, the number of our wounded, and the object of our present expedition, and when he thought he had gained sufficient information, he ordered their arms and legs to be chopped off, and to be sent to those towns which had concluded peace with Cortes, accompanied by the message that he hoped to kill us all before we could escape to Texcoco, and with our hearts and our blood he would make a savory offering to his idols. Quatimoxen then dispatched a large fleet of canoes filled with troops, and a considerable army by land, to Xochimilco, with strict commands not to allow one of us to escape alive out of that town. Not to fatigue the reader with a description of the many battles we fought with the Mexicans during these 4 days, I will confine myself by stating that, with break of day, so vast a number of Mexicans rushed all at once upon us from the inlets of the lakes, from the streets, and from the mainland, that it was with the utmost exertions only we were able to cut our way through them to a large square which lay at a short distance from the town, and where the inhabitants usually held their markets. There we halted for a few minutes, with the whole of our baggage, to arrange the order of our march. Previous to quitting this place, Cortes addressed a few words to us, in which he reminded us of our perilous position, having still to pass by several dangerous points, where the whole armed force of Mexico was lying in wait for us. It would, therefore, be desirable, he said, to leave behind as much of our baggage as we could possibly spare, for it would only encumber our movements in battle. To this we one and all replied, that we were men who had the power to defend our baggage, ourselves, and his person, if God lent us his protection, and that we considered it but a small sacrifice which he required us to make. When he saw in what an excellent disposition we were, he commended us all to God, and arranged the order of march. The wounded and our baggage were placed in the center, one half of the cavalry formed the vanguard, and the other half the rear guard, and the crossbowmen and Tlaxcalans were distributed in a similar manner, for we purposely collected our chief strength around the baggage, as the Mexicans invariably made their first attack upon us. Our musketeers were of no use to us, as all their powder was consumed. In this way we began to move forward, but as soon as the Mexicans found we were leaving the square, they concluded it was from fear, as was indeed the case, they sallied out upon us, wounded two of our men, and attacked our center with great intrepidity to make themselves master of our baggage, but they were unable to make any impression on the close order of our ranks. During the whole of our march to Cojahuacan, which lay about 8 miles from Xochimilco, we had continual skirmishes with the Mexicans, who took every favorable opportunity of annoying us with lances, stones and arrows, and then suddenly retreated beyond the canals, where we could not follow them. In this manner we reached Cojahuacan, at 10 o'clock in the morning, and found the town quite deserted by its inhabitants. I must here observe that there are a number of towns lying round about Mexico, all at about 8 miles distance from each other. Of these, Xochimilco, Cojahuacan, Iztapalapan, Chohuilobusco, Crounahuatz, Mizquic, and three or four other towns, are half built in the lake itself, and none of these towns lie at a greater distance from each other than from 6 to 8 miles, which accounts for the Mexicans being able to assemble so vast a body of troops against us in Xochimilco. When we arrived in this deserted town, we dressed our wounds, furnished ourselves with arrows, and rested for the remaining part of the day, and indeed we required some repose, for we knew we should have to fight many more battles before we reached Texcoco. The next morning very early we again continued our march, and took the road towards Tlacupa, which lay about 8 miles further on. Large bodies of the enemy fell upon us at three different places along our route, but we each time repulsed them, and pursued them to their canoes in the inlets and canals. On one occasion during this march, Cortes left the main body with 10 of the cavalry, among which were 4 of his grooms, to lay an ambuscade for the Mexicans, who every now and then came suddenly upon us from the inlets of the lake. Cortes attacked and routed a body of Mexicans, who, after a short stand, fled with precipitation, and were pursued by our general, in doing which he fell himself into a more terrible ambush, from which the enemy suddenly burst upon him, and wounded 2 of his men, and he, with all those who accompanied him, would undoubtedly have been killed or taken prisoners if he had not instantly retreated. The enemy, however, succeeded in capturing 2 of his grooms, who were brought before Cuauhtémoc, and afterwards sacrificed to his gods. The main body of our army had, in the meantime, arrived with flying colors in Tlacupa, while only Cortes, with the 10 horse, remained behind, and we began to fear that some misfortune had befallen him, wherefore Alvarado, Oli, and Tapia immediately turned back with a strong body of horse in the direction we had seen him take. They soon came up with the 2 grooms who had escaped from the enemy, and who related how they had been indebted for their lives to a precipitate retreat, and that Cortes was following behind, as he was obliged to ride at a gentle pace, his horse having been wounded. It was not long before our general came up, to the great joy of all, but he appeared excessively grieved at the loss of his 2 grooms, almost to shedding tears. Just as Cortes entered Tlacupa, it began to rain very fast, for which reason we rested here for a couple of hours in a large square of the town. Our general, with several other officers, the treasurer Aldrete, who fell ill here, Father Malgarejo, and several soldiers, including myself, ascended to the top of the great temple of this town, from which we beheld the neighboring city of Mexico, with the numerous other towns which stood in the lake. When Father Malgarejo and Aldrete beheld all this splendor at once, they could scarcely find words to express their astonishment, but when they contemplated the great city of Mexico more minutely, and saw the numerous canoes hurrying up and down this immense lake laden with merchandise or provisions for the city, or occupied in fishing, they were actually terrified, and exclaimed to each other that our arrival in New Spain could not be by the power of man alone, and that it was through the great mercy of Providence that our lives were still preserved. They had once before remarked, said they, that no monarch had ever been rendered such signal services by his subjects as we had rendered to our emperor, but now they were more convinced than ever, and would duly inform his majesty of what they had seen. Father Malgarejo then consoled our general for the loss of his 2 grooms, which so greatly afflicted him. While we soldiers were thus gazing upon the city of Mexico, we again by degrees recognized those spots which had become so memorable to us, and we pointed out to each other the great temple of Huitzilopochtli, the Tlatelolco, and the causeways, with the bridges over which we made our disastrous retreat. At this moment Cortes sighed more deeply than he had previously done for the loss of his 2 grooms, whom the enemy had carried off alive. And it was from this day our men began to sing the romance, which commences. En Tacuba está Cortes con su escuadrón esforzado, triste estaba y muy penoso triste y con gran cuidado, la una mano en la mexila y la otra en el costado, etc. As our general was thus standing in deep contemplation, the bachelor Alonso Perez, who was appointed fiscal after the conquest of New Spain, and lived in Mexico, stepped up to him and said, "General, you should not thus give way to grief, it is ever so during war time, and men will certainly never have occasion to sing of you as they did of Nero, - Mira Nero de Tarpeia 18, Aroma como se ardia, gritos de niños y viejos, y el de nada se dolia." To which Cortes replied, "How often have I not offered peace to that city? But it is not that circumstance alone which causes my grief, I am likewise thinking of the dreadful scenes we have to go through before we can subdue this place, though, with the assistance of God, we shall accomplish this also. I must now, however, quit these discourses and romances, indeed the time was ill-suited for such things. Our officers now deliberated whether or not we should march a short distance along the causeway, which lay near to Tlacupa, but as we had no powder left, and only a few arrows, besides that most of our men were wounded, and as a similar attempt which Cortes had made a month earlier on this same causeway had ended so disastrously, it was resolved we should continue our march, lest the Mexicans should fall upon us this very day, or during the night. From the near vicinity of the metropolis it was easy for Cuauhtémoc to send a body of troops against us at any moment. We therefore broke up our quarters here, and marched straight forward to Azcapotzalco, which we found entirely deserted by its inhabitants. From this place we came to Tenayucan, or the town of Serpents, as we called it. The reader will remember what I related in a former chapter respecting the origin of this name. The inhabitants of this place had likewise fled. We next came to Quatitlan, and the rain came down in torrents during the whole of the day, so that we could scarcely drag one foot after the other, from the weight of our arms and of our clothes, which were completely drenched with water. It was perfectly dark when we entered this township, which was also deserted by its inhabitants. The rain came down in torrents during the whole night, which created a great deal of mire and dirt. The inhabitants and Mexicans, who had fled to places where we could not get at them, kept hooting at us from the evening until next morning, without intermission. Owing to the extreme darkness of the night, and the heavy rain which was falling, we neither posted sentinels nor made any rounds. There was nothing but disorder to be seen in our camp, and no one remained at his post. I can speak from experience, for the first watch had been assigned to me, but no officer came to make the rounds, or see that all was right. The next day we marched to a large township, whose name I have forgotten. The streets were covered with mud, and not an inhabitant was to be seen. On the following morning we arrived at Akulman, which is subject to Tezcuco, and the inhabitants of this place being apprised of our approach, came out to meet us. They were accompanied by several Spaniards, who had arrived from Spain during our absence. Besides these, Sandoval, with the troops under his command, and Don Fernando, King of Tezcuco, had likewise come out to welcome us. Everyone was overjoyed at our return, but particularly the inhabitants of the surrounding neighborhood, who brought us quantities of provisions. Sandoval returned this same day to Tezcuco, fearing the enemy might make an attack on this town in the nighttime. The following morning Cortes also left, for this place, where we arrived quite fatigued, and covered with wounds. Besides that, we had to mourn the loss of many of our brave companions in arms, whom the Mexicans had carried off alive, and sacrificed to their idols. I must now inform the reader what a perilous posture affairs had assumed at Tezcuco. Chapter 146. Underscore how we discover, on our return to Tezcuco, that a conspiracy had been set on foot by the men of Narvaez's troops to murder Cortes, and all who were of his party, of the author of this conspiracy, his punishment, and of other matters. Underscore. During our absence a conspiracy had been set on foot by a most intimate friend of the governor of Cuba, named Antonio de Villafana, a native either of Zamora or Toro, in conjunction with others of Narvaez's troops, whose names, for honor's sake, I will refrain from mentioning here. The object of this conspiracy was to murder Cortes on his return, which was to be done in the following manner. The conspirators designed handing over a letter to Cortes while he sat at dinner with his officers and other soldiers, which was to be securely fastened and sealed, purporting to come from his father, with a vessel that had just arrived from Spain. While he was occupied in the perusal of this letter, he and the whole of the officers and soldiers who sat at table with him, and offered any resistance, were to be poignarded to death. All this being settled, it pleased the Almighty that the conspirators should also let two other distinguished officers into the secret, whose names, however, I must likewise repress. Both these officers had accompanied us on our recent expedition around the lake, and one of these officers, after Cortes should have been killed, was to be appointed one of the new captain generals. In the same manner the other chief appointments, besides all our property and horses, had already been disposed of by the conspirators. The Almighty, however, in his mercy, prevented this horrible deed from being carried into effect, the consequences of which would have been continual divisions, the inevitable loss of New Spain, and the total destruction of our troops. The whole of this conspiracy was discovered to Cortes by one of our soldiers a couple of days after his return to Tezcuco, and he had thus sufficient time to adopt active measures for suppressing it before it spread further. The honest man who made the discovery to him assured him also that there were several men of rank among the conspirators. Cortes, after he had handsomely rewarded this man, communicated the whole affair, under the seal of secrecy, to the officers Alvarado, Oli, Lugo, Sandoval, Tapia, and myself, also to the two alcaldes for the year, and to all those in whom he could place confidence. He then ordered us to arm ourselves without any further delay, and he then proceeded with us to the quarters of Antonio de Villafana. On entering his apartment we found him in conversation with several of the conspirators, and the four alguacils who accompanied us immediately arrested him. The rest instantly took to flight, but Cortes had many of them seized. Villafana being thus in our power, Cortes thrust his hand into that officer's bosom, and drew forth a paper, containing the whole plan of the conspirators, to which all their names were attached. Cortes, on perusing this paper, found the names of several men of importance among the list of conspirators, and being desirous of saving them from dishonor, he afterwards gave out that Villafana had swallowed the paper, and that he had not read it himself, nor even so much as seen it. A criminal suit was now instituted against Villafana, when he, with several others who were implicated in it, made a full confession of the whole matter. Cortes, the two alcaldes, and the quartermaster Oli, who formed the court-martial, then pronounced Villafana guilty, and sentenced him to be hung, and, after he had confessed to Father Juan Diaz, he was executed in front of his own quarters. Here Cortes allowed the matter to rest, though several of the conspirators were kept in close confinement, and in order to frighten them appearances were made as if they likewise would have to share a similar fate with Villafana. Our general, however, was desirous of saving their names from dishonor, to which may be added, that this was not exactly the time to go to the utmost severity of the law. From that moment our general had a bodyguard, consisting of the captain Antonio de Quiñones, a native of Zamora, and 12 trustworthy men, who were to be near his person both night and day. In the same way he likewise requested the rest of us in whom he could place confidence to watch over the safety of his person. He never, however, evinced any animosity in his subsequent behavior towards the other conspirators, though he took care to be particularly upon his guard against them. 19. After this miserable affair was ended, notice was given that the prisoners we had made in our expedition round the lake were to be brought in to be marked within the space of 2 days. In order not to waste many words on the subject, for the third time I will merely state that our men were even more shamefully cheated on this occasion than on the former. First the emperor's fifths were deducted, then those of Cortes, and after him our chief officers committed their piracies. If, therefore, any of us had an Indian female who was handsome or strong of limb, we certainly took her to be marked with the iron, but stole her away the night following, and took care not to show her again until some considerable time had elapsed, so that numbers of our slaves were never marked at all, and yet we employed them as our naborias. 1 Chapter 147 Underscore how Cortes issues orders to the inhabitants of all the townships in the neighborhood of Tezcuco which were allied with us, to furnish us with arrows and copper points for the same, and what further took place at our headquarters. Underscore. Our brigantines were now so far advanced towards completion, that they had merely to be rigged. For each brigantine a number of spare oars had been made in case of need. The canal in which these vessels were to be launched, and through which they were to be conveyed into the lake, was now also sufficiently deep and wide to swim these vessels. 20. Cortes now, therefore, began to make active preparations for the siege of Mexico. He issued orders to all the townships which lay in the vicinity of Tezcuco, and were in alliance with us, for each of them to furnish him with 8,000 copper points for our arrows, to be made after the model of our Spanish ones, of which some were sent them for that purpose. They were also to furnish an equal number of arrows, which were to be made from a wood particularly adapted for that use, and they received some of our Spanish arrows to work by. He allowed them 8 days for the making and delivery of these, and indeed both the arrows and the copper points arrived at Tezcuco in the time specified. Our stock of these now consisted of 50,000 pieces, and the arrow points made by these people were even better than those we brought from Spain. Cortes then ordered Pedro Barba, who commanded the crossbowmen to divide the arrows and copper points among his men, and see that every man fixed the points neatly to the arrows, and attached the feathers with strong glue. Every crossbowman was also to furnish himself with 2 closely twisted cords for his bow, further to provide himself with a number of spare nuts for the bows, that if one should crack or fly off he might have another in readiness. The crossbowmen were also to exercise themselves in shooting at heaps of earth to ascertain the strength of their bows. Care was therefore taken that they should not want for Valencian strings to twist the cords of, for the vessel of Juan Burgos, which had recently arrived from Spain, had fortunately brought a good supply of these as well as of bows, powder, muskets and other arms, besides a quantity of horseshoes. In the same way our cavalry were ordered to equip themselves, have their horses fresh shod, and to exercise them daily in all manner of cavalry evolutions. Cortes then sent word to the elder Exicot and Catl, his 2 sons, and to Chuchimclatl, informing them that we should leave Tezcuco after the feast of Corpus Christi, and begin the siege of Mexico. He therefore requested them to send him 20,000 warriors from their country, from Huexotzinco, and from Colala, who were now all in friendly alliance with each other. But it was unnecessary to inform the Tlaxcalans of our intentions, for they were always duly apprised beforehand by those of their countrymen who accompanied us in our expeditions and returned home with the booty they had made. The inhabitants of Tlalmanalco and Chalco were also requested to hold themselves in readiness to march out at a moment's notice. These and all our other allies were informed of the day when we proposed to commence operations against Mexico. From all sides we received the most friendly assurances of assistance, and that Cortes' orders would be punctually obeyed. 2 Chapter 148 Underscore how Cortes reviews the whole of his troops at Texcoco, and of his further dispositions for conducting the siege of Mexico. Underscore. After Cortes had thus acquainted our allies with his designs against Mexico, he determined to review the whole of his troops, and selected for this purpose the second day of Easter. This review was held in the large square of Texcoco, and our muster roll gave the following numbers: 84 horse, 650 foot soldiers, of whom some were armed with swords and shields, and others with lances, 194 crossbowmen and musketeers. Out of these troops he selected the men who were to serve on the 13 brigantines, each of which required 12 rowers and a captain, with 12 crossbowmen and musketeers. In this way the 13 brigantines required 280 men, who, with the additional number of artillerymen, amounted to 325. Next the cannon, with the necessary powder, was distributed among them, and when all this was done, Cortes published the Articles of War, which ran as follows. First of all, it was forbidden under a heavy penalty to blaspheme either against our Lord Jesus Christ, His Blessed Mother, the Holy Apostles, or against any of the saints in general. Secondly, no one was to ill-use any of our allies, take anything from them, not even of the booty they might make, whether this consisted of gold, silver, jewels, or of anything else, for we were to bear in mind that they joined us in this war at our own particular request. Thirdly, none of the men, either during day or night time, were to leave our headquarters, whether to fetch provisions from any of the townships allied to us, or for any other purpose whatever. Anyone found guilty of this would be severely punished. Fourthly, every soldier was to supply himself with a sufficient number of arms and keep them in proper order, for we were to remember how well the Mexicans were provided with everything in the shape of weapons. Fifthly, all gambling for horses or weapons was strictly forbidden. Lastly, none of the men, whatever company they belonged to, were to lay themselves down to rest without being completely armed and were to keep their shoes on, to which an exception was merely granted in cases of urgent necessity when a person was severely wounded, or unable to do duty, for we should be prepared to receive the enemy at a moment's notice. Besides these, the usual articles of war were again read over, which, among other things, threatened punishment of death to the sentinel who deserted his post or fell asleep while on duty. The same punishment would be inflicted on any soldier who left his quarters without his captain's permission, or who left his commanding officer in a moment of danger and took to flight. 3 Chapter 149. Underscore the manner in which Cortes selects the men who were to row the brigantines, of the commanders who were appointed to each, and of other matters. Underscore. Cortes, on selecting the men who were to serve on board the brigantines, could not find a sufficient number of sailors to row them. All the sailors who had come with us, with Narvaez, and with the vessels which had recently arrived from Jamaica, had been duly noted down, but even then there was not a sufficient number. Besides which many would not condescend to this work, saying, it was unreasonable to think of making rowers of them. Cortes then turned his attention to those who daily went out a fishing, and found they were mostly natives of Palos, Miguel, Triana, or other coast towns, which were celebrated for producing capital sailors. All these persons were commanded under threats of severe punishment to enter without delay upon the service of the brigantines. Many, indeed, who were men of noble birth, remonstrated with our general, and told him, it was insulting to think of setting them to such work, but Cortes paid no respect to persons, and by these means he mustered 150 capital oars, who indeed had better days of it than we who had to fight on the causeways, and obtained a much greater share of booty than we did, as will be sufficiently seen hereafter. As soon as each brigantine was fully equipped for war, Cortes ordered a flag, bearing the royal arms, to be hoisted, and a second one, bearing the number of the vessel. The following were the commanders appointed, viz. Pedro Barba, Garcia Holguin, Juan de Limpias, the deaf Carvajal, Juan Zaramillo, Geronimo de la Mota, the other Carvajal, who now lives at an advanced age in the street San Francisco, a certain Portillo, an excellent soldier, who had just arrived from Spain and had brought a beautiful wife with him, the naval captain Zamora, who lives at present in Gexica, a certain Colmero, who was both a good sailor and a good soldier. Further, Lerma, Hines, Nortes, Briones of Salamanca, Miguel Diaz-Daz, and one other officer, whose name has slipped my memory. The whole of the crews were strictly enjoined to pay implicit obedience to their commanders, and anyone who left his vessel was liable to severe punishment. The several commanders then received their particular instructions as to the manner in which they were to cooperate with the land forces. All these matters had just been arranged when Cortes received intelligence that the Tlaxcalan chiefs were marching with a large body of troops, consisting of Tlaxcalans and Huitzotzincans. The chief command of these had been entrusted to the younger Exocodon Catl, the same who commanded against us in our battles with Tlaxcala. He was likewise accompanied by his two brothers, the two younger sons of the excellent Don Lorenzo de Vargas. One of the chiefs of Colola likewise made his appearance, but with a very small body of men, for, though the Cololans had broken off their alliance with Mexico from the time we had punished them so severely, yet they never stood upon the best of terms with us. On the contrary, they appeared as if waiting to see how matters would terminate, and then to side with the triumphant party. After our direful retreat from Mexico, they were almost upon the point of declaring against us. When Cortes was informed of Exocodoncatl's approach, who had come a day before the time appointed, he went out with Alvarado and several other officers to a distance of about a mile from Tezcuco, and welcomed him and his brothers with every demonstration of joy. Exocodoncatl, with his men, marched forward in the best order, and all were accoutred in their best garments. Every company had a standard, on which was embroidered a white bird with expanded wings, being the arms of Tlaxcala, and resembled an eagle. Every one of the men had a bunch of plumes stuck on his head. They struck up their war music, waved their flags, and continually cried out, "Long live the Emperor, our master! Spain forever! Tlaxcala forever!" It took these troops about 3 hours before they had all entered the town, and our general ordered them to be provided with good quarters, and the best food we could get. When they had all entered the town, he once more bid them heartily welcome, assuring them he would enrich them all, and then desired them to rest from their fatigues, adding, that he would let them know the next day the duty they would have to perform. Almost at the very moment these Tlaxcalans were marching into Tezcuco, a letter was put into Cortes' hands from Hernando de Barrientos, who was at Chinantla, about 360 miles from Mexico. Barrientos related that, while he was exploring the mines, being left behind for that purpose by Pizarro, the Mexicans had attacked him, and killed three of his companions, and that he alone had been fortunate enough to escape to the inhabitants of Chinantla, who were at enmity with the Mexicans. This was the same people who had furnished us with those long lances in our battle against Narvaez. Without wishing to repeat the whole contents of this letter, I will only state that Cortes, in answer to it, told him he was about to besiege Mexico, and cautioned him to keep on good terms with the caciques of the country, and not to leave that place until he should receive further intelligence from headquarters, for he would run great danger of being murdered on the road by the Mexicans. 4 Chapter 150 Underscore of Cortes further dispositions for the siege. Underscore. Cortes now divided the whole of our troops into three divisions. The first division, consisting of 150 foot, all well armed with swords and shields, 30 horse, and 18 musketeers and crossbowmen, was commanded by Alvarado, under whom Gutierrez de Badajoz, Andreas de Monjeratz, and Jorge de Alvarado had each the command of 50 men and a third part of the musketeers and crossbowmen, the cavalry being under the immediate command of Alvarado himself. To this division 8,000 Tlaxcalans were added, and Alvarado, in whose division I also was, received orders to take up his position in the town of Tlacupa. Cortes particularly recommended us to furnish ourselves with good weapons, helmets, gorgets, and steel coverings for the legs, to protect our bodies from the destructive weapons of the Mexicans. These precautions were, indeed, very necessary, but, notwithstanding all our defensive armor, scarcely a day passed by in which the enemy did not kill or wound some of our men. The second division was placed under the command of Oli, and consisted of 30 horse, 165 foot, and 20 crossbowmen and musketeers. Andreas de Tapia, Verdugo, and Lugo commanded under him, he himself having the immediate command of the cavalry. To this division, likewise, 8,000 Tlaxcalans were added, and they were to take up their position in the town of Cojahuacan, about 8 miles from Tlacupa. Sandoval was appointed to the command of the third division, consisting of 24 horse, 14 crossbowmen and musketeers, and 150 foot armed with shields and swords. To this division were added 8,000 Indians from the townships of Chalco, Huexotzinco, and other places in alliance with us. Cortes appointed Luis Marin and Pedro de Urshu, two intimate friends of Sandoval, to command under him, the latter himself having the immediate command of the cavalry. This division was to take up a position near Iztapalapan, and Sandoval's instructions were to attack that town, and do as much damage there as he could, until he received further orders. Sandoval did not leave Tezcuco before Cortes was about to step on board, who himself took the chief command of the brigandines. On this flotilla there were altogether 325 men. Thus Sandoval, Oli, and Alvarado were each ordered off to different points, one marched to the left, the other to the right, and those who are not acquainted with the situation of this town or of the lake in general, would imagine that these divisions were removing from one common center rather than approaching it. Each of these three captains received particular instructions for his plan of operation, and the next morning was fixed for our departure. In order to be detained as little as possible, we set off the whole body of Tlaxcalans in advance to the Mexican frontiers. These troops marched out in the best possible humor, under their commander Chichimeclaitl and other officers, but discovered that their commander-in-chief, the younger Xicotencatl, had remained behind. After considerable inquiries, it was found that he had secretly returned to Tlaxcala on the previous night to take forcible possession of the Caziquemén territory of Chichimeclaitl. It appears, according to the accounts of the Tlaxcalans, that he wished to avail himself of this favorable opportunity of raising himself to supreme power in his own country, which the absence of Chichimeclaitl offered to him, who, in his opinion, was the only person that stood in his way since the death of Maxixquitzin, as he did not fear any opposition from his old blind father. This Xicotencatl, the Tlaxcalans further added, had never felt any real inclination to join us in the war against Mexico, but had frequently assured them it would terminate in the destruction of us all. 21. When Chichimeclaitl received information of this, he instantly returned to Texcoco in order to apprise Cortes of it. Our general, on hearing this, dispatched five distinguished personages of Texcoco, and two Tlaxcalans, who were his particular friends, after Xicotencatl, to request his immediate return to his troops, in Cortes' name. They were to remind him that his father Lorenzo de Vargas would certainly have marched out against Mexico in person, if blindness and old age had not prevented him, that the whole population of Tlaxcala continued loyal to his majesty, and that the revolt he wished to excite would throw dishonor on his own country. These representations Cortes desired should be accompanied by large promises, to induce him to return to obedience. Xicotencatl, however, haughtily replied, that he was determined to abide by his resolve, and our dominion in this country would not have continued thus long if his father and Maxixquitzin had followed his advice. Upon this our general ordered an alguacil to repair in all haste with four of our horse and five distinguished men of Texcoco to Xicotencatl's abode, to take him prisoner, and hang him without any further ceremony. All kindness, added Cortes, is thrown away upon this cacique. His whole time is spent in devising plots and creating mischief. I cannot suffer this to continue any longer, the matter has now come to a crisis. As soon as Alvarado received information of these commands, he urgently begged of Cortes to pardon Xicotencatl. Our general replied that he would consider about it, though he secretly gave the alguacil peremptory orders to put him to death, which was accordingly done. Xicotencatl was hung in a town subject to Texcoco, and thus an end was put to all his plottings. Many Tlaxcalans assured us that the elder Xicotencatl himself had cautioned Cortes against his son, 22, and had advised him to put him to death. This affair delayed our departure from Texcoco for one day, and thus it was not till the 13th of May, 1521, that we commenced our march. As our road lay for a considerable distance in the same direction, our division under Alvarado and that under Oli marched out at the same time. The first night we encamped in the township of Alcamán, to which place Oli had dispatched some men in advance to prepare quarters for his troops, and had ordered that the houses which they took possession of should, by way of distinction, be decorated with green boughs. When we arrived with Alvarado, we found, to our surprise, that every house had been taken, and the two divisions were just about to settle the matter, sword in hand, when the officers stepped in between, and thereby put a stop to the dispute. But the insult which had thus been offered to us was not so easily to be forgotten, when, therefore, this circumstance became known to Cortes, he set off Father Malgarejo and Luis